The Salvation Army Thrift Store. We're not for profit. We're for appreciating the classics. For ever-growing amateur collections. For finding the sounds that speak to your soul. We're for making a difference right here in your community. At the Salvation Army Thrift Store, we're not for profit. We're for good. Shop today at the Salvation Army Thrift Store near you.
Ron DeSantis is threatening to pull Disney's special governing status, or whatever that means. Apparently, since I think the 60s, they've been able to govern their own property as if it's their own government. And because they've been supporting wokeness, and because they've been supporting, I'll just call it child grooming, DeSantis has basically said, I don't see why we shouldn't pull their, why they should have the status. And several Republicans in the state are talking about pulling it because, well, it seems like if there are at least some politicians who are doing anything in the culture war, it's just the people in Florida. It's probably fair to say there are several other states that are doing awesome stuff. I'm hearing, what is it? Georgia's doing constitutional carry. Mm-hmm. Texas just did it. A bunch of other states are doing it. Florida might be doing, these are really, really cool things. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about how this is now turning into a major culture war movement with the Daily Wire launching a new kids programming, format channel or whatever, $100 million. And, a lot of pushback from, female athletes. Over the trans issue in sports, the female athletes are now starting to speak up and having a big impact. So it's Friday. We're going to be chilling. Jen Psaki is quitting, apparently, and I don't think anybody really cares all that much. I just shrugged when I heard, and I'm like, sure, whatever. And joining us today on this lovely Friday to talk about all of it is Michael Malice.
Aloha. You want to say something?
Yeah, hi. You introduce yourself. Yeah,
oh, hi, I'm Michael Malice, star of stage and screen.
That's correct.
I just want to give a shout out to Adrian Curry and to Elizabeth, who's in Columbia today.
Who are you? What do you do?
They know who I am.
Well, but there may be new viewers.
Okay, I am, author, my last book, The Anarchist Handbook. Tim did a chapter for the audiobook, which is at anarchistaudiobook.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool.
Anarchisthandbook.com for the book. Hardcover is coming out soon. My next book is called The White Pill, and it's a book on the new right, and Dear Reader is the book on North Korea. And you can follow me on Twitter at Michael Malice.
All right. We got Seamus.
Amazing. I'm Seamus Coughlin. I run a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. If y'all want to go check that out, we release a new cartoon every single Thursday, sometimes on Tuesdays. We just released a video on this first topic we're talking about, which is these men competing in women's sports. I think y'all will enjoy it.
Ian Crossland over here. I want you to respect yourself. Find love.
Oh, that's a great message.
Thanks, Michael.
I just want you to go to my YouTube channel. It's actually a lot easier. it's a lot easier to just click subscribe at Freedom Tunes. So.
Yes. I wanted to say this is our 500th episode, and we have Michael Malice, and I'm loving it. It's going to be a great evening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And stay tuned for the bonus section.
Oh, we don't do this on Friday.
Well, that's why they should stay tuned.
Yeah, come on, Tim.
All right. Don't forget, head over to timcast.com. Become members to support our work directly. You keep all of our journalists employed. We are a member-funded website, and you will get access to exclusive episodes of the Timcast IRL podcast with our guests Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m., only for members. So, again, sign up at timcast.com. But don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends right now, and let's talk about that first story.
Can I say something before we get to that?
Yeah, sure.
I hope at some point during the show you guys look back at, like, the 500 episodes, and because I think that's an important thing to kind of get a little meta, like how the show's grown, what have you learned, what advice you would probably give to people
who are doing this. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I think people are interested in. 500's no joke.
You know, it's a good point. I don't really think about stuff like this, you know, to, like, do a look back – and prepare something. Maybe we should. We could do, like, you know, who's that lady who sings that song about remembering you? Mm-hmm. Celine Dion.
That lady.
McLaughlin?
Let's do a live stream.
You know what we could have done? It would have been funny is if we just showed the past episodes with Michael. Yeah. And we did like a
slow motion.
Yeah.
In memoriam.
So good.
Let's do a live stream where we watch all 500 episodes and do our commentary on it.
As an aside, there was this woman who wrote this thing called the Alternative Influencer Network.
Oh, yeah.
And she
was there a book?
It was like a report for like a nonprofit where she smeared.
Oh, yeah.
It was a crazy conspiracy theory thing where she had a bunch of different YouTube channels that have nothing to do with each other connected with red lines.
Yeah.
So, but like it connected Chris Raygun to Richard Spencer.
What?
Like Chris Raygun is like a culture commentary guy who plays video games and Richard Spencer is Richard Spencer. And like there's a line connecting them. And even he was like, what? Like they've never even said each other's names before that.
Can I show my age? There was someone named Mark Fabiani who worked for the Democratic Party for Hillary in some capacity, and he did this in the 90s. He created this big flow chart of everyone pointing to, you know, Cato Institute, and this right. one's in the bed. So that's why when Hillary Clinton went on, I believe it was Good Morning America, and said with this huge blowback, there's this vast right-wing conspiracy against my husband, and it's out in the open. She wasn't just talking out her ass. She was referencing this document that they had. So this has been going on for a long time.
Well, here's the best part, and why I bring it up, is that I complained very heavily about it because it put me right in the middle. And like the Young Turks did a segment on it where it's like Tim Pool is the center. They were talking about me, but it like makes me the center of this vast, you know, alt-right conspiracy or something. And I was just like, it's fabricated. I had friends who were working in these media companies who even rejected the story outright because I reached out to them like, hey guys, look at this. And I pointed it out. They're like, whoa. Like people who worked at The Atlantic and Politico. And so she does a follow-up.
So then she's
specifically
like,
on me.
Tim controls she Atlantic does, and Politico.
She does a follow-up specifically on me where she says she watched all of my videos, which is the most insane thing anyone's ever done.
Is that literally possible?
If you turn them all on at the same time, but it drives you insane.
This was This was 2000, like 19, I think.
Yeah.
So this was before IRL, but this meant there were 2 hours of content every day for like 3 years. So that meant that to get this done, it was like in the span of a year, she had to watch my content. She had to watch like 4 days worth of content every day to keep up with the content I was producing. And she referenced a whole bunch of my old content. Now, far be it for me to call her a liar. She said she watched it all. I am impressed.
Yeah.
And then she ultimately concluded that like I wasn't that bad and wasn't far right or something like that. It was the weirdest trying to take me down, or maybe just like this, I did a deep dive on this guy and he's normal.
This is the longest suicide note I have ever. Because if someone is sitting down and watching your content for like a year, my God, that is a cry for help.
But is it not interesting? True that. Is it not interesting that the person who actually sat down and consumed all of your content ended up walking away going, okay, he's not some like far right Nazi? Turns out that's just a thing we say.
But
it's not true.
I like how like after 6 months, she's like, I'm going to find that Nazism. Like 9 months, it's there. It's got to be in the back. Member content.
I'm imagining like she finally finished watching all the videos and her eyes are like just like deeply sunk and like black and her like skin is pale and she weighs like 100 pounds. She's like, I've watched it all.
No, but I'm imagining because when I was writing my book on North Korea and I was just telling all my friends about all these cool Kim Jong-il stories I heard, and after a while they're like, okay, I don't care about North Korea. So she's like talking to her friends or her boyfriend or whatever. They're like, I don't care about this beanie guy. Can you please talk about anything else? Ben Shapiro, the Young Turks, something, anything.
And she's like, well, I watched 8 hours of his videos today, and I can't stop thinking about this one thing he brought up. And you got to understand, the Great Reset is real. I'm telling you. now she works for InfoWars.
Now there's going to be like a romantic novel coming out about someone who falls in love with you because they watched all of your content.
And that woman's name was straight. Owen Schroyer.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, 50, she could probably do such a good impression of you.
50 gray beanies or something.
Yeah, right.
Should we talk about the news?
Yeah, we should.
All right, here we go. We got this story from CNN. CNN. Ron DeSantis signals support for stripping Disney of special self-governing status as feud escalates. Because apparently the only Republicans who actually do anything are in Florida.
Yeah, it's weird.
So basically Disney has this special thing going back to 1967, a state law that established the Reedy Creek Improvement District, giving Disney the power to establish its own government in Central Florida. He basically said, you know what? Why should we have companies that have this special privilege, right? Which is a smackdown because DeSantis said Disney went too far. I think Disney did go too far because after the backlash, let me slow down. Disney refused to call out the parental rights in education bill, which the left calls Don't Say Gay, which makes no sense because that doesn't even make sense. And so they refused to do anything. Disney employees walked out. Some of them got arrested for child sex trafficking, whole other story, but around the same time, mind you. And then Disney decided they were going to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, we oppose that bill and we're going to see it defeated in the courts. And then DeSantis is all like, yo, what does Disney have to do with the people passing legislation?
Yeah.
That's gone too far. Now you got Republicans saying they're going to be going after Disney and stripping away their rights. And good. I'm loving it because these leftists, Abigail Disney, actually, she's the grand niece of Walt Disney himself. She's the granddaughter of Roy Disney, who's co-founder. And she was saying like, these far right groups are trying to rule by minority, and they're saying insane things, referencing Chris Rufo and all that. But she says, I'm happy to see the right finally going after the business sector that's for so long propped them up or whatever. And I'm just sitting here watching like, you know.
Did she think Disney propped the right up?
Well, these companies are all woke. That's why I'm like, what do you think's going on?
Yeah.
The institutions are all woke, leftists, critical race theory, et cetera. The right has not been supported by CNN. I mean, look, let's just say starting in 2015. How about that? But we know it goes back further.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm a little bit torn because as an anarchist, I like the idea of a company being able to have its own government within its own jurisdiction. But I am ecstatic that if either of the political parties, and hopefully both, alienate from corporate America, which has historically been, I think to a large extent, you have these kind of chamber of commerce, Mitt Romney Republicans have been a thing in the Republican Party, especially after like Republicanism was defeated by FDR. You kind of had these, you know, weak Republicans who are kind of like, you know, suburban shop owner, middle of the road kind of types. And they kind of made apologies for corporations just doing really unconscionable things. So the fact that Republicans at all are coming to understand, which Democrats, many Democrats for a long time understood, that corporations are not your friend, that if a corporation were a human being, that person would be a sociopath. And the more distance there is between politics and corporate America, the healthier it is for everyone involved, including corporate America.
Introducing Batiste Sweat Activated and Touch Activated Dry Shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste dry shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
I think corporations could also be likened to the Borg.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like to point out the Borg in Star Trek is like communist. They're this collective that just grow and expand. I think that's a better way to view it because it is a system of governance the Borg operates in. But corporations are not too dissimilar in that they absorb other companies. They grow, expand. They're authoritarian and single-minded.
Yeah, profit is their motive.
I worked for Disney as a temp for their Pocahontas premiere in the park in Central Park. And speaking of the Borg, they had like a dress code. You couldn't have piercings. You couldn't have like dyed hair. Like there was a very specific list of things about your appearance that you had to have, even just working for that one day for them.
Where was it? Disney World or?
Central Park. They had Pocahontas, the movie, had the premiere in the park was a thing. Showing my age.
Now, I don't know all about this. It just seems so weird that any corporation would have its own government on U.S. soil. That doesn't seem right to me. So.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very, very strange.
So, it's similar in Anaheim with, was it Disneyland or whatever? I don't know. World is in Florida.
World's in Florida, yeah. Atlanta. Yeah.
And, so when the people were rioting down in Anaheim over, I think it was a BLM thing or something like that, the police came out in force more than I'd seen in most places. And it's because, well, now you're coming after a major corporation and their corporate profits.
Yeah.
So once the rioters and you know protesters started getting close to this bridge that brought them close to Disneyland or whatever, the cops just went off. They had boken. You know what a boken is? Mm-mm. It's like a wooden katana, and they were on horseback with boken.
What?
Yes.
Where did the cops get those from?
Like, I don't know.
Japan,
but
man.
The Mulan exhibit.
it was a weird thing to see cops on horseback with boken, but it was also kind of cool. I'm like. These are like samurai warriors, I guess. It's the weirdest thing to me. I don't know if they actually hit anybody with them, but that's what they're for. They're for striking people.
I got a prediction. I think that this is going to go to the courts or do whatever. Disney's going to fight it for a while. Then they're going to agree and be like, okay, whatever. And then they're going to start lobbying other states and be like, who wants Disney World? And then California's going to take it. You don't think so?
I mean, the cost of moving that thing would be insane. I think it's more that they have to publicly make a show of fighting it, but then if they lose, they could be like, well, we did what we could.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these corporations don't have the spines. Like any person will take as much space as you give them, but as soon as you put your foot down, they're more than happy to, you know, kind of roll over like a dog and you put it on its
back.
They
make a really loud noise and then roll over.
I want to make a point for Mr. Mouse here. You have this famous quote about police.
What, every cop is a criminal?
Well, no, a more specific quote that a lot of people say.
I don't know which one you mean.
About killing kids?
Oh, there is no law so obscene that the police would not be willing to enforce it up to and including the mass execution of innocent children?
Yes. I think there's something similar for corporations.
Oh, for sure.
I think it's fair to say that there is no path to profit so obscene that a corporation would not pursue it up to and including supporting the pedophilia and grooming of your children.
Well, I mean, we see it in like mining and, you know, in very poor countries and Dole or who?
Chiquita.
Chiquita Banana.
Exactly.
With
the Banana Republic.
Yep. Yeah, I think, that's where the term comes from, I believe. So, you know, again, I think one of the things that corporate media does in dividing people between right and left and Democrat and Republican is that if conservatives or Republicans hear a leftist argument, they dismiss it out of hand. But I think it would behoove them to listen a little bit more to some of the things that the wrong people are saying, because oftentimes there's a kernel of truth to them. And one of them is that corporate behavior, especially internationally, is often completely unconscionable.
Well, I think I saw this with the rise of Trump when I was in Florida or at his rallies. Regular people told me they weren't Republicans. I remember this one specific moment. I was at a Fort Lauderdale rally, and I was talking to a middle-aged woman, and she was like, I've never voted before. I'm not a Republican. So, you know, I'm just here because Trump's saying things that I like. And I think that's what the Republicans didn't like, this insurgency of regular people. Hmm. So Trump brought this populist wave in, and now it's no surprise there's popular support among the conservatives and the right to go after woke corporations because regular people don't like their kids being screwed with, whereas previously, the establishment Republicans were very much like, hey, man, the businesses, you know, are hooking us up. Don't get in the way. Similarly with Democrats, but, you know, they do different things, playing catch back and forth, trying to, you know, say what they need to say to win. Now you've got people who are like, I don't care if you're a corporation or a government. If you suck, you suck.
Well, look at it this way, just to add to your point, to agree with your point. When you think of someone from Kentucky, you think of the stereotypes, think of the bad stereotypes, think of the good stereotypes, whatever you think. You're not thinking of Mitch McConnell. It's impossible to think of Kentuckians and then think that Mitch McConnell is the guy in Washington who represents what Kentucky means. It's an absurdity.
Yeah, it really. Ridiculous.
We got Michael.
Oh, a pizza arrived.
Hell got some yeah. pizza. It's just for you.
This is courtesy of John Schnatter's Papa That's John's. Right, Papa
Michael John's screamed and stomped his foot and said, if you don't have my pizza, I'm not doing the show.
That's right.
Starting to smell good in here.
Look at me. I'm shameless. Look at me.
First of all, this was put in front of me by some racist in the studio.
I don't know who
thought that it would be funny.
That's so crazy.
It's not racist if they're not human.
You can't. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Because well, he's a leprechaun.
Right, right, right. right? Yeah. Just to clarify. But also, you can't be racist against white people. I'm pretty sure YouTube allows that, right?
Irish people weren't white until being white meant you had to apologize for being white.
Yeah. No, he's absolutely right. There was arguments, including in America in the early 20th century, that regarded in some cases, Irish people are as part of like the black population.
Italians,
you
want to
hear something interesting? You want to hear something interesting? So, where the stereotype of a drunken Irishman comes from?
Is drunken Irishman. Let's be real, bro. We're not going to lie about
it. It's Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Check this out. It's Seamus's house.
We're not going to pretend. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just go with it.
You don't stereotype.
Like, we're not going to pretend that one's not
we're
true.
We're the universal truth.
Yeah,
you're trying. You're trying to see. You see, here's the thing.
Anyone else want pizza?
No,
not yet. Maybe after the show.
It was in the turn of the century when poor Irish immigrants were struggling or homeless. They would pretend to be drunk so that they would get taken to police stations where they would get food to eat and a place to sleep.
Yeah.
And British people actually have a substantially higher rate of drinking problems than Irish people.
Well, it's not only
no, British people have more of a problem with it, but they don't do it as much.
But they're,
they do it more.
Thaddeus Russell in his book, Renegade History of the United States, talks about this also, because you had all these super waspy factory owners. You had all the Irish people came over. They did their hard work. Then they went home and they went drunk. And these WASPs who had the Protestant work ethic, where you thought working hard was inherently moral and relaxing was somehow inherently sinful and something to watch out for, they were flipping out. They're like, look at these guys are lowlifes. They're degenerate. They're subhuman. They want to go out and have a good time. But as a result of those drunken immigrants, a lot more people started having less work hours, having to pay for overtime.
Because nice.
Wait a minute, if those lowlifes are getting time off, why am I not? So that's how it works.
You're saying the labor movement wasn't a bunch of like proud leftists raising their fists. It was a bunch of drunken Irishmen.
Hey, so much going to work today. What are you talking about?
I'm not talking about even the labor movement. I'm saying this preceded the labor movement. This was a one.
Oh, I know. I'm kidding.
Yeah,
you're telling me I just seven days a week. I'm supposed to be there. What am I supposed to drink? It's ridiculous.
But he had. That guy you're channeling. I'm assuming your grandfather has
great grandfather.
He has a point.
No, it's true.
I studied Guinness, the history of Guinness. Mm. Basically, the dock workers would make the beer, or whoever it was would make the beer, and then they'd give all the good beer away, but the Irish, they didn't have any money. Maybe. So they'd scrape the bottom of the barrels to drink, make the beer out of that goop, and that turned into Guinness, which is my favorite beer, personally.
Oh, Blair White is in the chat.
Blair.
She said, "What up, damn, Tim Pool's dad will not stop talking."
He's got a lot to say.
Wow.
I hear he has a book coming out, too.
How strange.
Speaking of, how's the book coming along? Oh, sorry, I caught you in the middle
of a
feast moment.
This is a live show.
We can talk later.
He's got a job to do.
I just passed 150 pages. It's probably going to be 280, maybe 300. So it should be done not long. I have one tough chapter left, and then it'll be all smooth sailing.
It's called The White Pill. Do you feel like you're getting white-pilled as you write it?
No, because I'm writing about atrocities that are being done to millions of people, including children. As I've mentioned before, I've been crying a lot.
Oh,
but this is the kind of thing where when people read it, be like, how have I never been told this?
Yeah.
This
is about the good for you. Are some of these things too spicy to give us an example or what?
Well, I'll give you one example. This is a very easy one. So I'm writing about the Soviet Union. In the 1930s, you had these big series of purges, right? So you kill the dad, right? Mm-hmm. Cause whatever dubious reason, then the wife is arrested because she is a wife of the enemy of the people. That was the law. And she can't even say I'm innocent because you were married to him. Now that kid has no parents overnight. They're an orphan. They're beat up at school because you're a kid of the enemy of the people. And people who your family was friends with couldn't take you in because why are you taking in this daughter whose dad was a spy, right. Supposed spy? And now you had a rash of all these kids killing themselves. Wow. And they're like, what are we going to do about these kids killing themselves? So this is the kind of like logic that happened in the Soviet Union and these atrocities that the fact that I'm like the only one talking about this is really disturbing to me. And when you have the New York Times saying this isn't happening, this is all anti-Russia propaganda.
Did you see this Twitter thread? There's a Twitter thread going viral. I forget the guy's name, so forgive me. But he talks about why the left is freaking out over the parental rights and education bill so much. Now, there's a meme where someone says, it's not rocket science, guys. They're just evil and they want to diddle
kids. Aaron McIntyre, let's give him credit.
But he's wrong. And there's a great thread about this that James Lindsay had retweeted. And forgive me to the podcast host who posted it because I forget his name. I don't know if you guys want to try and look it up. But what he was saying is this – what's happening – and I think he's saying it's intentional – is revolutionaries need to sever the relationship between child and parent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they first, in secret, will start explaining to the children why they're evil and bad and why they should feel guilt and shame. Once they've sufficiently made these kids hate their own identity – and their parents' identity, they offer up alternative identities. You can now be one of these oppressed minorities. Pick and choose. You can be anything. It's all a social construct. Then when the parents finally find out and are shocked by what's happening, the kids are already so deeply entrenched in the ideology that the teachers can then say, see, we told you they'd come at you. You could only trust us.
Yeah.
And at a certain age, you want to be against your parents because as a teenager, you want to be your own identity. So it's very useful to leverage that kind of a natural social age group.
I don't know if I could go so far as to say there's an intentional cabal of, you know, people doing this, but I can say that whether it's a conspiracy or just it's happening, it is happening this way. And the way this gentleman describes it is, it's because there's a lot of teachers who are following a curriculum that seems to be empathetic to children who are experiencing some issues. Mm-hmm. And so they're going along with it. But I think the important point, why is the left so hell-bent on lying about what this bill is, calling it Don't Say Gay? Well, the bill also prevents teachers from talking about heterosexual marriage and traditional relationships. Why do they need to frame it this way? The one thing they're truly threatened by. The bill does not prevent teachers from talking to children about being gay. It prevents them from doing it in secret.
Hmm.
They can't tell the kids, don't talk to your parents. Many of these teachers are saying they're going to do it anyway. Yeah. All right. If you're an adult and you want to have sexual conversations with 5 to 9 year olds and you say, don't tell your parents, I'm going to go ahead and assume you're grooming these kids.
Yep. 100%.
Or worse.
What else are you supposed to assume? I mean, that's the most, it's not being uncharitable. That's the most reasonable possible assumption. And you mentioned that they want to sever children from their parents, and it's very true. It's debatable whether there's a concerted effort, but you see this in media all the time. The family unit is consistently attacked. In basically every television program, the father is always a complete moron who can't do anything right. And that's because if you want to go after any structure, you start by attacking the authority. And so it's been seared into an entire generation of people, if not 2 or 3 generations, on some level, that dad is stupid and not to be respected and made fun of. And I think part of it is just a result of the fact that a lot of artistic people who go into Hollywood don't have great relationships with their fathers, generally speaking. I think that's more typical, always the case.
I think it's a reaction of feminism, because mm-hmm. feminists for a long time were proclaiming that you shouldn't show women as being stupid, but that only leaves the guys.
Yeah, I think there's truth in that, too. But even if you go back to the honeymooners, which I would say is before feminism had saturated the culture as much, the husband was still sort of weak and stupid and very lucky to have his wife. Yeah,
but he would always threaten to beat his
that's
wife.
That's true, right? So they did soften these types of characters with feminism, but there is this interesting trope of like dad being a hapless fool.
The Flintstones, Simpsons.
I absolutely have to shout out Futurama.
Mm. American Dad. Wife on American Dad is dumb.
Well, no, in Futurama, they go to the moon, and it's 1,000 years in the future.
Yeah.
And they're watching the honeymooners, and he's like, one of these days, bang, zoom, straight to the moon.
Right.
And then Leela's like, I didn't realize 20th century astronauts were so fat. And then Fry's like, he's not an astronaut. And he was just using beating his wife as a metaphor for – he was using space travel as a metaphor for beating his wife.
I'm wondering if in all this division of family in the Soviet Union when they did it, were there kids that – basically had their beliefs shattered and then reformed, and then at some point realized, maybe even too late, like, what have we done as the government turns on them? Like, are these people that are, like, useful pawns, are they turned on eventually?
Oh, yeah. I mean, then Stalin turned on the secret police, and then he turned on the top of the military, which was a major problem in World War II because all the military geniuses were killed. Another thing that they taught in the Soviet Union very famously was the story of Pavlik Morozov, who was this little boy whose dad was hoarding grain. And he turned his dad into the authorities, and his dad killed him. This is a completely made-up story, but there were statues built to him and, like, songs about him, because you're taught in school, if your parents are doing something wrong, you have to inform on them, and if you're killed, you basically become a saint. This is the greatest thing you can do.
Michael, do you watch anime?
God, no.
You need to watch Attack on Titan.
No, I disagree with that. I've never heard the word need used more incorrectly. Yep.
And so there's a meme of, like, an AI Jordan Peterson saying, watch Attack on Titan. And you know why?
Amazing.
Because he wanted iTunes gift cards.
I don't actually expect you to watch it, so I'm just going to spoil the gist of it
for
you.
It's already spoiled. It's anime.
Yeah, so the first season. That's awesome. First, you're gonna love this. The first season.
Oh, yeah, one more thing I just got to say. The only cartoons I watch are Freedom Tunes.
Thank you so much. Right, much appreciated.
The first season is there's this – the last city. It's surrounded by three walls, and there are giant humanoid monsters called Titans that eat people.
Yeah, I've seen the preview. Yeah, yeah. And they're invincible.
What it's really about is that there was a great nation that somehow came into the power to become Titans and use it to conquer the world. Eventually, the nation crumbles. I'm not going to spoil too much. And now, in the future, these people are effectively in a prison to pay the sins of their ancestors. In the mainland, where some of these people that are called Eldians still live, the now dominant country says, you're evil because of what your ancestors did. And so they're forced to live on reservations. And then they're basically treated like second-class citizens. People say, like, whenever they come in a situation with someone, they're like, yeah, well, you have the evil blood within you. So there's a scene where a kid turns his parents in because they're trying to rebel against the government because, you know, they refused. They believe in the greatness of themselves and things like that. There's a whole bunch of themes that talk about a lot of what we're going through with sins of the father, white privilege, gulags, and all of that stuff. And that's what the show is really about. And so at first I was like, I got to be honest, when someone told me it's about people who, like, use these ropes to fight giants, I'm like, I really don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
And then when the robot, Jordan Peterson, said, you got to watch Attack on Titan, or you can probably do it.
You have to watch it on right now. Watch Attack on Titan. Embody the archetypal hero. Sit on your couch.
So I watched it.
Yeah.
Grab
and then it's like, it's crazy how there's, like, one scene where there's two little girls. And one little girl's mother was killed, but she's the evil race. And so then the one girl, she's like, your people are evil and your mother deserved to die. And she's like, why? My mother didn't do anything to anybody. And she's like, because of your blood. And it's just, it's brutal, man. Show's so cool. And then there's, like, people zipping around and fighting giants. So I guess that's a plus.
But there's also, like, that reminds me of Fantastic Planet, which is, you know, a movie about, like, the giants calling humans as pets. And it's a parable for Czechoslovakia and the Soviet occupation.
Oh, wow. Was that how they were treating the Czechs?
You would love this movie, Ian, because this is the most, like psychedelic movie. Like, it's made by paper cutouts. You've probably seen the iconography.
What's it called again?
Fantastic Planet.
Thank you.
There's no way you won't love this movie.
Oh, wow.
And what's really crazy is if you watch a certain version, it's dubbed, but the subtitles don't match the dubbing. They're slightly different translations. So you're watching it. It's a complete – it screws your head completely.
Oh, interesting.
It's interesting how stuff like that works in a cinema. Like the idea that Godzilla is actually a metaphor for nuclear weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's Gojira.
Gojira. Well, I'm sorry, Tim.
Uncultured.
He's half Asian, Irish. You know.
I was just doing an April Fool's.
In case you haven't heard.
I was just doing an April Fool's joke. Of course it's Gojira.
As a factoid, it is Gojira, but because when the Japanese people were saying Gojira, Americans thought it was an accent for Godzilla.
Wasn't Jackie Gleason in the first movie?
Was he?
Or Orson Welles? It was some major person was in the first movie.
Know.
First Godzilla?
Yeah.
It is kind of crazy that there was a show where, like, the joke was he was going to beat his wife and the audience would laugh.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to beat my wife.
Humphrey Bogart used to smack women in the movies and people would be like, I love him. Best performance.
A lot less back talk in those movies.
Yeah, it's very cultural.
Truth. Hey, you brought up April Fools. I wanted to give you a little history on April Fools.
I'm just going to say whatever you're about to say. It's probably contested. It's probably no one knows.
Yeah, don't trust me.
Did you look up Snopes?
No.
I don't believe it.
From Snopes.com. That was from Marka.com. I've never heard of it. It's
Marka.
It's quick. thought that April Fool's Day's thought came from about 1582 as France made a change from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar. April 1st was the first day of the year in the Julian calendar. And then when they changed it to January, they started making fun of, like you said, probably making fun of people that still lived under the Julian calendar as they're all now Gregorian.
So I mentioned that before we started the show. I mentioned that before starting the show. My citation was an episode of The Simpsons.
Perfect.
So
that's,
I also just want to do one thing. For everybody who's listening, put a one in the chat if you think that Michael Malice will finish the whole pizza by himself.
I'm not
going to
finish the whole pizza. I'm
not but is he lying?
Is he lying?
That's the question.
I'm not. Yeah. There's no way I'm finishing this.
That
pizza.
Is April Fool's
hit the
joke?
Like button if you think he's lying.
There you go. Perfect.
No, also, if you think he's telling the truth,
and send a
also hit the like button. Yeah. If you think he's telling
and send a dollar to PayPal at michaelmalice.com if you think I'm lying.
Dude, Michael, how is Austin? I got to ask you. I got to know.
I am so happy every day in Austin. I can't even begin to tell you. And I'll give you a rundown of reasons why. First of all, I didn't realize to what extent living in – I was just in L.A. last weekend signing hardcovers. I didn't realize to what extent living in New York, I had this background music of anxiety and tension.
Bad, yeah.
And I don't have any of that in Austin. Second, Austin is such a Venn diagram of different scenes making it happen. And everyone is very collegial. Like they all get together and you when you meet people, you're friendly. In New York, when I would go to an event or meet someone, I'd have to bite my tongue and be like, who is this person?
Yep.
Are they going to be annoying? Are they going to smile out to my face and go on Twitter and blast me? There's none of that in Austin. Hmm. There's things I miss. The restaurant scene is not what it could be. Austin closes down early. There's no like diners. So if it's like 1 a.m., you want to get a bite, you go on IHOP, which was the situation. Hmm. But I am turning my house into like this get together space so that all the people coming through can, I throw these little events. Everyone can meet each other and hang out. And I did only one so far, and it's worked absolutely swimmingly.
I have a question.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Do diners in New York City take reservations?
No.
Oh.
Well, I don't get it.
So I had a tweet that went viral on Reddit. The left was attacking me because I said I went to a diner and they sat someone before me, so I got mad and left. And they were just like, Tim Pool doesn't know what reservations are.
Diner?
And then, but the reason I asked is I was like, maybe the people who are sharing all of this live in New York, and like New York is so crowded that they would take reservations at diners.
Never.
Too charitable, man. Weird. They're just dumb.
Yeah, I guess so. That explains it. Yeah.
I worked at like a nice diner. It wasn't a diner. That's the thing. It was a French-Canadian restaurant that served diner-ish, but really high-end food. And we definitely took reservations, but it wasn't a diner. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you get your diner food, your $7.95.
There is a restaurant in New York, I don't know if it survived COVID, called Diner. But they did take reservations. But obviously, that's what you meant.
Or was it? I've been to I've never been to a diner that took reservations. It was the weirdest thing to me when the left was like, Tim Pool's so dumb, he doesn't know what a reservation is. And I was like, bro, we were at a diner. Like, you walk in and there's like one, like, haggard old lady with a cigarette going, where do you want to sit?
And I was like, no, she goes, sit anywhere you want, honey.
Well, no, they were like, there's a wait, there's a 20 minute wait. Yeah. And then I was like, okay. And then they sat actually two groups before us. And I was like, okay, I'm leaving. Like, I'm not. And then I tweeted about it kind of as like a half joke because it, like, you know, I just tweet as to be silly, but also because I was making a point about being a disagreeable person on petty bullshit and the point being that, it helps you in business being disagreeable, especially on petty things. You don't want to be a dick to people, but if you're unwilling to compromise for small things, then you'll tend to get better deals.
You have to establish your own boundaries too, because I'll give you an example. This actually happened. I flew to LA because I was being interviewed for some HBO documentary, which I'll get into that's a future date. And they were dragging their feet about booking my planes. So I'm like, I'll just do it myself. You guys can pay me back. I book the flight. I get back. I do a killer interview. They really liked it. Great. And they're like, all right, before you get reimbursed, you need to fill out this like W-2 or W-9. And I go, you have all the information you need. You have my PayPal address and you have the receipt. You can choose to pay me back or not. That's your prerogative. I'm not doing one more thing. And they were like, well, we have to. I'm like, you have, I've said my pieces on Yes Discuss. They paid me. But that's the kind of thing where that was me being very, very petty. Right. But it's amazing how companies will make you jump through hoops, even when you're helping them. And I'm very big on really being obnoxious about it and drawing a line ahead of time, because otherwise they'll just keep asking for more and more and more.
No, I totally agree. Yeah,
and why wouldn't they?
The machine craves profit.
Why wouldn't they?
Leverage rules. Is everything. Leverage is everything. So you go into a business meeting, if you go in with the mentality of desperation and need, you've lost.
100%.
But if you genuinely need, well, that's your position. So, you know, I've been in positions where I go into a business meeting knowing, like, if I don't get this deal, I'm screwed. And I walk in and I'm like, what do you have to offer? And they'll be like, we're going to pay you this much. And I'll be like, make it a little bit more. And they go, okay. And I'm like, all right, thank you very much. I've been in business meetings where I didn't need anything from them. And I walk in, they're like, we want to pay you, you know, $100,000. I'd be like, give me $500,000. And they go, we can't afford that. I'll go, well, thank you for your time.
Yeah.
You know, you've got nothing for me.
Yeah. When you go into a meeting or interview or whatever, you want to ask them, what can you give me? Can you give me what I need? Even if you're the one desperately in need, don't let them know that. You put them on the defensive and you ask them if they can give you the things that you need.
And let me say one more thing, kids. If the filthy hippie is telling you to walk in the business meeting and say, gimme, 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 you know, it's coming from a place of truth.
Of psychedelic.
My favorite, one of my favorite bits of advice I gave to somebody. Is they got a job offer at a company I worked at. It's Vice. And I told my friend, like, hey, I'm putting in a good word for you. I could use your help. Tell them you want this job. And he said, okay. Mm-hmm. He emails. He messaged me back saying, hey, I'm not going to take the job. They're only offering me $60,000 a year. And I said, well, how much do you want? And he was like, I don't know. I don't really want the job. And I said, okay, would you do the job for 80? And he goes, no. I said, would you do the job for 90? And he goes, no. Like, would you do the job for 120? And he goes, well, 120, yeah. And I was like, so that's your answer. Email back. There's no in business. It's just terms. And he was like, you want me to email back telling him to double their offer? And I was like, you don't want the job anyway. What's your worst case scenario? You don't get a job you didn't want?
Right.
And he was like, oh, okay. He emailed him and they were like, we appreciate your response, but we're unable to pay you that much. And he was like, okay. And then I was like, what was your worst case scenario? And he's like, nothing.
Right.
And they came to me and they were like, your friend asked for a lot of money. And I was like, yeah, he didn't really want the job.
No, it's but in their heads, your friend is worth a lot of money. And right. They're going to reach out to him next time instead of being, now they're going to know what his price is.
Exactly.
So it'll save everybody a lot of time.
Yeah. So here's what I love asking people. I think I brought this up on the show a year ago or so. Michael, if you got a phone call tomorrow morning from McDonald's, corporate HQ, and said, Michael, we want you to run the cash register at our Des Plaines, Illinois location off of, you know, 355 or wherever. I don't know. What would you say to them?
No.
For you, it might be I would be reticent or reluctant to say wrong answer, but that is typically the wrong answer in business.
I don't think there's any amount of money I would do that for, because that meant it's not the money that's the issue. I'd have to sacrifice my entire career and all what I'm working toward.
That's why I say for you. Yeah. But for the average person, the answer is how much?
Yeah, right. Give me $200,000 a year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. 200.
But for a lot of people, they would gladly do it.
I was going to say less. I was going to be tell McDonald's you want $100,000 to work the register. Most people are going to be like, yeah.
No, but then you've got to move.
That's true. You know, and that's
very expensive. Not have friends.
Mm. And business is all just about the terms and the leverage you're willing to make. So the more you're willing to sacrifice, the more leverage you have, the more you win. So if you're like, look, buddy, I'm willing to sleep on a park bench and I got nothing to lose. You're paying me what I want or you're not getting me. They're going to be like, oh man, I guess we have to. But some people have families.
Or they go, I guess we really don't want him.
Yeah, fine, whatever. And then go sleep on a bench. Yeah.
This happened to me. I was working. I had a meeting with a celebrity when I was doing my co-authoring stuff. And we really, really hit it off. I had my standard fee and they came back with half of it. And in retrospect, I have to appreciate that that was their move. It's like, oh yeah, you're asking for X. How about half X? What do they got to lose?
Right.
I was livid, and I don't even remember if I took that project or not, or if I know I didn't fold.
You know what I do? I don't respond to them.
Oh.
Yeah. I actually snapped at one of the biggest radio, biggest production companies and like distributors in the world. I had this big business meeting. I'm in a room with like 10 people, and I don't want to give away too much information for the sake of their privacy because they work with some people like very, very famous personalities. They sent me a contract with the most insane and ridiculous terms I'd ever seen. And I responded back with, is this a joke? please, if you'd like to do a deal with me, come back with a real contract. And they said, this is normal in business. You would hire an attorney who would amend the contract. And I said, if you think I'm going to spend $5,000 to correct your bullshit, it's not happening. And so I just said, feel free never to email me again because I'm not going to waste my time once I can further.
Yeah, that happened to me not that long also where there's some congressman from Brooklyn. I forget his name. His chief of staff just emailed me. He's like, oh, we'd love to have a congressman on your show. Great. I go, how about like 1 hour on Monday? We could talk about his background because he had an interesting background. And they go, oh, he'd only be available for 20 minutes. And how about on Wednesday? It's like, I have an hour long show. I didn't respond. It's right. Just like, you're pushing him onto my show and then you want me to restructure the whole show for you? Who the hell are you?
But there's something about not being Joe Rogan, I guess, to use it for lack of a better analogy, where these people think you're willing to take this. Because we get hit up fairly often from people who are
Can I ask you, do you think it's that not being Joe Rogan or the fact that they're so oblivious to how podcasting works and how the internet works that they really don't think in terms of like CNN hits?
Maybe, but I'm pretty sure if they reached out to Joe and Joe was like, I'd love to have him on the show, they would say, tell us how you know, where to jump and how high. Like, just let us know what you
mean. Here's why I think you're wrong. Because when the new right came out in, I believe, 2019, I got booked to do Rogan and I got booked to do Rubin, who's very big at the time, both of them, obviously. And I asked my publisher if they had money for travel, which not they don't always do, and that's fair. And they told me in writing, this the head of publicity, no, they can do Skype. So this was 2019. And the idea that I got on Rogan to promote this book and I'm going to call him up, be, hey, Joe, we're doing Skype, is so removed from what is you and I would regard as normal or sane that a lot of times I have to wonder what planet these people are on.
It's true, but we've gotten hit up by people who work in a similar space. And they'll be like, hey, this celebrity, this prominent personality can come on your show, but you'll have to pre-record or move your schedule. And I'm like, you guys work in the same industry.
And you know what else they don't realize? Is a lot of these people that are maybe big names for people who read OK Magazine, if that's still a thing, you're not going to get the big numbers having them on the show because it's going to be vanilla. They're not going to say anything interesting. Yeah. And it's going to be like people tune in, but you're not going to have the traction.
Exactly. Like they think because they get a bunch of views on their platform, which was provided for them by someone else who built it, that you're lucky to have them on your show or to collaborate with them. It's like, well, but they're not interested.
Let's hard segue back to the politics stuff we were talking about. I wanted to ask you, Michael, about let's talk about what's going on with Russia and Ukraine. Ooh. Obviously, you were born in Ukraine.
Lviv, I guess now.
Lviv, yeah. I'm just curious what your thoughts are, what's going on. You know, Russia said they were going to shut off. So here's the big news. Russia threatened to shut off gas to Europe unless they opened bank accounts that would hold their currency, U.S. dollars and euro, which would then do an exchange for rubles. And April 1st came and Putin did nothing.
Like a
whiny little bitch. He failed to uphold his own threat against these nations. So I'm curious, you know, your thoughts on what's happening.
I've been asked this more than any – this is probably the question I get asked a lot and, like, people blowing up my phone. And I pride myself on trying to have an interesting perspective or at least say something uninteresting in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. And I got nothing on Russia-Ukraine for the very simple reason that I don't understand Putin's endgame. I don't understand how he thought this was going to end up. That I can tell you that anyone who just says he's stupid or he's crazy, that just means they don't know either. They're just using this kind of word to kind of do the work.
Well, I just assumed you knew that the spear of destiny has been buried in Western
the Holy Lance.
So
Vladimir Putin going for the spear of destiny.
I raised like $5,000 for Ukrainian refugees. My dad was recently, he had business in Ukraine. He was on a train getting out of there and he was seating next to some kid and the kid kept crying saying they're going to kill my dad. They're going to kill my dad. I heard this through my sister, and my dad, who I've never seen cry in my life, who is kind of, which is a big surprise looking me, kind of an ass, and not a very nice person, just like myself. For him to lose it really says a lot, which is why I was comfortable raising all that money. What is not in dispute is that millions of people fled war, understandably. And my concerns are also with the Russian population, mind you. Like the fact that someone's living in Russia, now they can't use their phone or they can't use some bank account just seems crazy to me, unless we're talking about the high up.
Yeah,
people.
But look at what Russia is back on track.
Well, yeah, and the ruble has restored
now
its value.
They turned McDonald's. They turned the M like sideways to make it a B, and now it's called like Uncle something.
No, it isn't. Is it really?
Yeah. They've repurposed what Joe Biden has done. Is he severed the ties between Russia and the West? These restaurants still exist.
Right.
The Russian supply chain still exists. So Putin basically is like going to industry and saying, get what you can. That's why Putin threatened Europe. He said, you've got to open Russian bank accounts. It's forcing Western nations to open Russian banks, propping up their financial industry. or their financial sector.
My, as you and I mentioned a little before the show started, what they're doing is an enormous attack on the value of the dollar, whether by design or otherwise. And if I'm a businessman and I see what happened like with Canada with the trucker convoy, and I see what's happening with inflation here, and I see that my money is not going to be safe in US or Western banks, I'm going to put my money elsewhere to make sure that money retains or increases in value. And that is a very dangerous, slippery slope we are going down, whether by design or otherwise.
Well, you heard the BlackRock guy saying, put your seatbelts on, it's going to get real bad, inflation.
But I think we all knew, because one of the things that we all talked about in like early 2020, mid 2020 is, you can't just shut down all industry and not have an economic like massive consequence. Like that's not a thing, or else every so often we could just be like school teachers just not work for 3 months a year.
Yeah.
So at some point those chickens are going to have to come home to roost. This is not in dispute. No one doubted that.
So you've got to find places to put your dollars. What does the average person do? Right? I mean, if you're living paycheck to paycheck, it's going to be like Venezuela. Get your money and spend it immediately on whatever you can.
I would honestly, this is going to sound like a joke, but I would put in crypto. I think crypto is going to be a much better store of value in the short term, let alone the long term, than the US dollar.
I think crypto is what the World Economic Forum is hoping for.
You think so?
Absolutely. It's digital currency.
No, I'm not their digital currency. I mean things like Bitcoin or Ethereum.
I know. Yeah, I know. They're stoked on it. They're very excited for it. Bitcoin will be their gold, and they'll use Ethereum is on the Amazon Web Services, right? AWS?
I don't know.
Is Ethereum? Ethereum is basically a company, right? So Bitcoin is decentralized. That's resilient. But what I think the elite, the World Economic Forum, Davos Group types, they are betting on this.
You don't think crypto is a better store of value than the U.S. dollar?
It absolutely is.
Oh, that's all I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
When Klaus Schwab and these international corporations are betting on Bitcoin, you bet along with them, right?
Yeah.
Here's what people are doing to make money. They look where Nancy Pelosi is investing, and they invest right along with her. Yeah, because she's got an inside track, right? I told this before. I don't know if you know this, but I went to Davos in, I think it was 2017. I have friends who set up a peripheral event outside of the World Economic Forum at like the base of the mountain or whatever in Davos. The whole city becomes events, pop-ups and bars, and crypto was the theme. Everyone there was like, crypto is everything. So I bought a bunch of crypto, and I'm very happy that I did. These elites, they want digital currency. Bitcoin's trackable. They can see everything you're doing, you know? And so it's perfect for them. They can ban you. They can shut down your account. They can ban addresses. If I've got cash, I can pull out, you know, a $5 bill and hand it to Ian in exchange for a beanie or something. But if we're doing Bitcoin, my address can get blocked on the network if they control transactions. So the Bitcoin, let me clarify this. If they can get control of apps, if they can get control of financial institutions, there are companies that facilitate Bitcoin transactions.
Sure.
You'll always be able to have your like rudimentary decentralized service, and you can find an open source way to transfer Bitcoin. But for the average person, look, you can hide, you can put stacks of cash under your mattress, or you can put it in Bank of America. You put it in Bank of America, the government can take your money from you. So that's what they want. It gives them substantially more control. You'll be less likely to be holding any kind of cash. You won't be. So no average person is going to open up a Coinbase account and an open source third party wallet because it's going to be too confusing for them or they're not going to care. If they are into crypto, it's going to be because it was simplified by, say, Coinbase or Gemini or something.
Sure.
And the government can easily seize all that stuff. So it gives them more control. It's like we saw when they tried to do that thing where they were going to track all accounts that had $600 or more in transactions.
Right. Yeah.
This is the path forward for them. Mm-hmm. That being said, despite all that, yeah, I bought a bunch of crypto recently.
But I also think that this is a huge market incentive to provide wallets that are as easy to use as Coinbase. Because once this becomes, like for example, Apple a couple of years ago made it so that even Apple couldn't get into their own iPhones because then they were like, if we leave a backdoor for law enforcement, that's a backdoor for hackers too.
It's got to be open source.
Yeah, I agree with you.
But
don't you think the Bitcoin people know this?
Yes.
They're the kings of open source stuff.
Yeah, we were looking at crypto payment systems. MetaMask is not open source at the moment, which is a little disturbing.
And that means any company can have the government go to them, issue a national security letter, then you're gone.
And you wouldn't know. Like, that's the problem with when the source isn't open, you don't know what their code is doing. It could be feeding data to the FBI as we speak. Coinbase could be very well, and you wouldn't know.
I'm sure they are.
I would be surprised if they weren't.
But of course they are. Bitcoin is still, you know, the bee's knees, right? Regardless of what bad crypto, people want to do with it, don't let that stop you from recognizing how powerful it is and how it can greatly, you know, help people.
But also recognize the risks.
Oh, at what point at the present time?
I'm not telling anybody to buy anything. Keep that in mind, guys. No financial advice for me. I'm just saying, don't, you know, do your own research and figure out what makes sense for you. In my personal opinion, for me, I bought a bunch.
At what point can the cops institute civil asset forfeiture? If you, like, what level of cash do you have to have on you before they can just take it for
it's
no reason?
It's not a level of cash. It's even a dollar. It's just a measure of them deciding that it was used in the drug transaction.
And not only that, but, like, let's be real, Ian, they can take your shirt off your back and then lie about it.
That's so brutal. That's but I mean, legally, cool like, legally, they could take my money and be like, we thought he was planning on spending it on something illegal. So he took his money.
Or he got this money because he sold drugs.
You see that story about a woman, a dog sniffed her out. She had a bunch of money in a briefcase. She had like, what did she have? Like $100,000 or something. And then the cops were like smiling, saying like, we took this money from a woman. And everyone was like, I tweeted this. I was like, so you're saying you just robbed some lady?
Yeah.
And everybody was like, yo, they said she didn't commit any crimes. They just took her money.
Those are the only dogs you're allowed to hate.
Drug dogs?
Yeah.
But can they take the money and say we're just taking it because we think you're going to commit a crime?
No,
they
no.
have to okay. say you, they, have you to, did?
So this is how asset forfeiture works. And there's a lot of movement right now in politics, thank God, to rein this in. For the first time, I think, in the last year or the year before, more money was seized through asset forfeiture than through all burglaries combined. So basically, it goes to this medieval concept where if I kill you with a sword, the sword is guilty and the sword can be destroyed. This was like a thing.
Yeah.
So basically, what their point is, well, we're not going to allow, as part of the drug war, people to enrich themselves through drug dealing and so on and so forth. So I go to your house. I've decided that you're a drug dealer, so on and so forth. I seize all of your assets, your boat, your house, I seize your bank accounts. And they become basically the property of the cops. And then you have to sue, although you have not gone through due process and been found guilty, to get that stuff back. Now it's really hard to sue when all your money is spent and all your assets have been taken from you. Yeah. Well, okay. So that is kind of the situation, and it's really un-American and unconscionable. And it's kind of surprising how much it's under the rug.
Yeah, really. It's so disturbing.
It's very, very disturbing. And I got to tell you, if someone is a drug dealer, as which something I do not support, to have like every penny that they have just taken from them overnight seems a bit much when that's not done to murderers or people who harm children.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Yeah, nonviolent drug offense, man. Let's talk about it. This is I think Jerry Nadler just has been pushing forth legislation.
Let's talk about it right here. From TimCast.com, House passes bill to decriminalize marijuana federally, and it was the Republicans who said no. Democratic Rep. Jerry Nadler passed with a vote, his bill, sponsored by Nadler, passed with a vote of 220 to 204 along party lines. Republican Reps Tom McClintock, Brian Mast, and Matt Gaetz joined the Democrats voting in support of the bill. Democrat Reps Henry Queller and Chris Pappas voted against it. I would really love to hear from Thomas Massey why he is not listed among these Republicans. Did he vote against this? This is why I don't trust this stuff.
Right, framing.
When you hear it's like, Democrats want to make it so that you can have pot. And then you hear that certain Republicans like Thomas Massey or Marjorie Taylor Greene, maybe not Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's more conservative. Thomas Massey is more libertarian. But I'm like, where are the more libertarian voices? Matt Gaetz is voting for it. It makes me feel like it's probably not exactly what it is.
I can guess why someone would vote against this as a Republican. First of all, Mass just followed me on Twitter, so congrats to him for voting for drug legalization.
Nice.
I think it's a very dangerous slippery slope if the federal government starts taxing things. that could be what they're concerned about, because that's not a thing.
I bet that's it.
Yeah, and it's proposed that they're going to do a 5% sale, I think, sales tax up to
sales tax is a state level. So now you're going to have a state and a federal tax just for one product. Yeah. That is what I think would be the big concern.
And it's, I guess. And to be honest, it's 483 pages, which is another reason.
It should be one page.
Yeah.
Marijuana is hereby legal.
This is why I'm saying I don't trust them.
And Massey's good at finding a thing in it that's like, whoa, you're slipping this in. I'm not voting for this.
Yeah, he'll read it.
It's got stuff like coming through Puerto Rico.
Well, the other thing in the bill that I saw is also it's retroactively letting people clear their records.
That's why I want to – why I was so for it.
Well, Donald Trump, as I stated, should have granted clemency and pardoned all nonviolent drug offenses that weren't plea deal, like that weren't pled down. So some people, you know, at first I was saying like he should let all these nonviolent drug offenders go. Some people are like, well, what if they sold the kids? I'm like, okay. All right, there. I'm not sure. Right. So not those people. And they said, what if they did something violent but took a plea deal? You're right. They should have a review process to go through legitimate cases of someone who was like charged with selling pot to another adult or something. And Trump should just get out of jail.
Like if they had a gun on them.
Can I just add one more thing? If you're someone who is on a grand jury, and the point of a grand jury is the DA or assistant DA puts forth the evidence, and the grand jury says, is there enough evidence here to charge the person and put them on trial? Our legal system, it's not just charge. You have to get those charges approved by a grand jury. If you're on a grand jury, it is very easy to convince those grand jurors not to return charges on a drug charge, and there's nothing the district attorney can do about it. So this is your ability, if someone is a nonviolent drug salesman or whatever, to get that person off and save a life, especially if they're young and poor.
I don't think here's the challenge, and this, I think this will be a good conversation for with you, Michael. Are there some drugs that should be illegal?
I can't think of any.
What about like fentanyl?
Well, no, the problem with fentanyl is the dosing.
Right.
Mm. Right? You don't, it's not like someone is taking fentanyl saying, I want to kill myself. Yeah. They think they're taking, let's say, 5 grams and they're getting 50, or that 5 grams is, and then your heart can't take and you die. So fentanyl was sold at doses that people knew and understood.
They give it in hospitals.
Yeah. This would be resolved overnight.
So then, well, this is why I ask, right? Because then you have the issue of what if some guy is arrested for selling, let's say he's got 10,000 doses of fentanyl, and let's say they're not misnumbered or whatever, and he dishes them out throughout a city. This person should not be in jail, or, you know, what do you think?
This person is Pfizer.
Hmm.
Right. You just described Pfizer.
That's true. That's absolutely correct.
What about, do you think there's any drugs that shouldn't be regulated?
What do you mean by, I think all drugs should be regulated by the market. The same way that, for example, if you're Jewish and you keep kosher, it's very important for you that you eat food that is in common with kosher law. Otherwise, it's like a major, major sin. And people don't realize this, but every food in the supermarket has a little letter K.
That's right.
And the K is not even strict enough. So the people who trust there's a U. That's for Passover.
Yeah.
If you're really strict, you have to have a U, not a K. Yeah.
What is the U?
The U is like a different kind of licensing agency, a rabbinical licensing agency. So what you would have is, instead of having it be the FDA, who is, you know, is largely corrupt and whatever, you would have, just like right now in Whole Foods, you'll have fair trade or the little stamp. Yeah. I was on the plane just now, and the pretzels on the back said woman owned. So if that's something that matters to you, you can look for that label. I mean, the pretzels would not shut up, and they were really annoying.
But the funny thing about that is when it's like woman owned, is that if you are a sexist, you could choose to discriminate against these businesses. Whereas, like, if it's
or
you could be like, well, I want more women cooking.
No, they cost 80%. They cost 80% as much as the male-owned pretzels.
Michael, how could there be a wage gap if there's no way to even define what a woman is?
That's a great point.
Who's making wage gap per hour?
To follow up on the question about regulation. What you said, that the thing
I feel like Jen Psaki.
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Ducey. Following up.
As we stated.
Ian Crossland for press secretary.
You said that the fentanyl was about the dosing. So if people were just like, there's no regulation on it and the market dictates, and he's like, well, he's addicted to it, so I can give him as much as I want because the market's dictating, the guy's pocketbook is dictating what he wants, but it's a drug addiction.
Sure. But what I'm saying is the problem with fentanyl, there's two issues, or any addictive drug. It's the addiction, but also the ODing and dying, right? And that's the thing, that's the first thing to resolve, and people not knowing dosing. So the more information that's out there so people can make informed choices, the less people are going to be dying.
What if it was regulated? Like there's a drugstore that's got all of the drugs, all of them, and you could choose to do whatever, you know, but the store couldn't give you an overdose. Like, you'd walk in and say,
you can only buy one dose at a time?
No, like, let's... Well, yeah.
Well, like aspirin. Imagine, like, with that, what, like, you only buy one tablet at a time?
No, What I mean to say is there's probably different degrees to which it could be regulated. I'm not saying, you know, necessarily you walk in and they say you can only get one.
Well, they have that. This we don't have to guess about that because we have that now. Tanning salons. You can only tan for X amount of minutes. So what they do is they just hit 6 tanning salons.
Yeah.
And they also have it right now. There's a workaround for addicts where they go prescription shopping. So I'll have 4 doctors give me prescriptions and then I'll get them all filled. So addicts, the thing that people need to appreciate is addicts are – really, really good at resolving their addiction and getting workarounds. They're gonna, cause their entire identity and their entire worldview is about getting that drug. Right. So to pretend that they're gonna be playing by the rules as opposed to, we have to realize what we're dealing with and kind of work to mitigate
harm.
So
let's say the regulation is that the fentanyl, for instance, it's being sold by a private legal entity. The doses have to be measured perfectly and isolated as single doses.
Yeah, sure. I think they would love that.
Yeah. So the reason I brought this up is like, if the problem is dosing, well, street doses can be all over the place. But if there's a formalized process that the government's like, hey, if you're selling these things, you have to use like a specific machine that guarantees the dosage so that you can't give someone the wrong dose.
But that's also right now in California, like if you go to like dispensaries, they can only be like 20 milligrams tops. So it's got this weird kind of situation where,
but I mean like, You'll get a pill pack, right? Like you will for, you know, Tylenol or whatever. And it's just like, this is 25 milligrams of drug. This is 25 milligrams. Sure. You're not getting 75, 26, 43.
Right, exactly.
It's a, you know.
But that's what the market would have. There's no other, right. There's no like, it's not like you go to buy vodka and one bottle of Absolut's going to be 80 proof. The other one's 10 proof. They're right. All going to be consistent.
But you can go and get, you know, it's, right, the market does it.
Yeah, it's a fraud issue.
But you needed a prescription. Would you need a prescription for the fentanyl then? And the people that can't get the prescription.
No, I think that's the point. I think the point is you already can get prescriptions for this stuff. We're saying prescriptionless.
Yeah.
Personal choice to go in and buy whatever you want.
I feel like they would just buy the 30 doses and take 2 or 3 at a time instead.
Yeah,
of
or
one.
Get someone to buy it for them. Right, they can work around this very easily.
I'm simply pointing out that you might in the street get a pill that they tell you is
for
one
sure.
Dose
that would cut back two. On that. That's right. A big part of the problem.
That's a big part, yeah.
Exactly. But you're saying it sounds like you don't even need regulation in that capacity because
why is my phone going?
Yeah. I suppose the bigger threat is that they're going to be shorting you. They're going to tell you it's a dose when it's a half dose to save money.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, oh yeah, this is 20 milligrams.
Well, that's when you have branding because then it becomes, oh, that stuff's weak. This is the good stuff. Same thing without any other product.
Yeah. And then,
the thing with potato chips, like you'll buy the bag of potato chips that's half air.
That's so annoying.
But
or more.
You know why that is, yeah. Right? It's not like they do it on purpose.
They do it on purpose.
Dude, I got an iced
coffee.
It
settles, but it doesn't settle that much.
I got an iced latte at Starbucks. It was like 90% ice. I sipped it, I drank it, and it was gone. And it was a big cup of ice. Well, yeah, it wasn't intentional.
They fill the whole cup with ice and then put the shot in the milk.
It's really ice with a little bit
of coffee. Well, to be fair, shrinkflation is through the roof these days.
Yeah.
You know, it's really funny. People are posting these videos of like boxes of cereal a week later. And it's like, they're just visibly smaller. But the funnier thing is when the boxes stay the same size.
Yeah.
And then you see the ounces on the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
Goes down.
I'm concerned about fentanyl. I feel like it's next level. Like heroin was dangerous, but fentanyl.
It's Russian roulette.
Like
it's crazy.
It's going to be the next 10 times stronger drug after fentanyl. And we're going to be having the same discussion, but it's like you can only take 0.01% of what you could take.
Have you ever taken opiates?
One time, yeah.
Have you, Michael, had opiates?
Yes.
Seamus?
No.
I would describe it as a nightmarish drug.
I stretched on it and it
because
was useful.
I was, when I had a kidney stone, I was given Percocets and it was a feeling so good. It's indescribable.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that terrified me.
Oh yeah. Good point.
I was like, wow, I know exactly why people get addicted to this stuff. It felt like it's hard to explain.
It feels like all your joints have become removed. Like if your body was made out of like hinges, like they get all unhinged. Yeah. So it's like all your body's just floating.
I see why it equates
floating,
opiates and yoga are from, I think that was all kind of combined in the early years.
I would describe it as like, it felt like an energy of goodness emitting from every part of my body. I was like,
are you
this is so good.
Timcast, sponsored by
opiates.
Sponsored
by
opiates.
I'm literally saying it's terrifying for that reason.
Yeah.
And so you know what I did? Even though.
More?
Yeah. I you know it.
Tossed them out.
Wow, you could have sold those. Or given it to children.
Suppositories. Yeah,
no,
I was.
No. I threw it. I basically tossed it into like I put it on my windowsill.
Just threw it in my cat's water. I was like,
but then eventually I just was like, I don't want these things, man. Because, I got
power
tell you,
of
man,
pleasure.
Well, it was scary. I'm like, I completely understand why people can get addicted to this stuff because it just feels so good. And you think, what's one more time to make it feel
and
good?
And it's that second time where when things just
and then comes it doesn't feel
down.
Good the second time. It doesn't feel as good.
Yeah, chasing the dragon.
It's like a
I mean, the addiction starts to kick hard.
You ever eat corned beef hash?
That's him.
Hold on.
You never had, no, for real?
Now.
You never had,
don't assume.
Delicious.
No. Well, like, the first bite is really good. The second bite is okay. The third bite is eh. And the fourth bite, you're like, I'm done with
that. That's like circus peanuts.
Yeah.
You eat one, you're like, this is great. The second one is like, please kill me and my family.
Oh, no.
Honestly, if we were going to use opiates as a species, that's how we should use them. You take one bite and that's it. You cut yourself off after that if you can, you know. Leave it to the addictive human to make that
Ian?
Decision for themselves.
Drugs are bad. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. The word drug is very weird. What is a drug anyway?
It's a suitcase term.
It's a non-food that you ingest that does
like,
something to your chemistry.
It's like the word conspiracy. Like, as soon as you hear it, you know it's bad, but it's like it's applied to things correctly and incorrectly.
Caffeine's a drug.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Psychoactive.
But no one's ever like lectured me about how caffeine opened their mind, you know? Like, hey man, you gotta try it. You're gonna be like a different person.
That's not true. People often talk about how if they don't have their coffee, they can't think.
They'll talk about how their coffee makes them better, but they won't be like, I'm enlightened because I had caffeine.
They're not gonna say. They're not gonna say, I took a caffeine pill and I met the machine elves.
Yeah.
Michael, I wanna talk to you about the machine elves.
Okay.
Check this out. Here's what I was thinking. We talked about this last week. I was thinking that, you know, the brain naturally produces DMT.
Okay.
And so I wonder.
Am I in Rogan?
I was. Well, aren't you writing that book on the machine elves?
No, I'm writing that book.
Hold on, good book.
Guys, in the future. You gotta chill. So, here's what I was thinking.
Maybe if we had some opiates, we would be able to.
What I was thinking was, let's say, I'm gonna give you a wild bunch of ideas that probably make no sense, but it's fun. So, multiverse theory.
Yes.
That every possible permutation of existence can exist or whatever. So I was thinking about that, and then I was like, if the multiverse is real and it's infinite, then there is a Batman universe. And each one of these DC universes could actually exist. So we're not actually imagining and making things up. We're just seeing into the multiverse. We're seeing a vision into the ether. And I started thinking about that. I'm like, if people naturally produce DMT in their brains, what if there's a connection line, a very, very faint one, but some people who are very creative and talented have a stronger line than those who don't? The people who are NPCs have had their connection severed. That's why when they take DMT, they blast off and it just like opens up the portal and they see everything and then it closes. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's a little bit wrong from my understanding. We talked about this when I was on.
That's why I said it's a bunch of crazy ideas that probably make no sense.
It makes perfect sense. I just think it's incorrect.
Oh, okay.
It's very coherent. We talked about this when I was on with Alex, which is the idea that in the same way that a drawing of you or like a drawing of you is you in 2D and this is 3D Tim and the elves live in 4D, right? So we're 3D projections of 4D beings.
Right.
The point being that in the same way that I could draw Batman and he exists in the drawing, but Batman doesn't exist in 3D here on this earth, a lot of people that we see around us in 3D don't exist in 4D. So they are, in fact, background characters who do not have a higher eye being.
Well, so the machine elves tell you secrets.
Okay.
Do they?
I wouldn't know.
They tell you anything? Well, that's what Alex Jones says.
Yeah, that's what Alex says, yeah.
So that's kind of my idea, that it's that you're getting a connection to them, that
right.
They're explaining things to you and sharing ideas and information. And so those with more natural DMT in their system might have a stronger connection to hearing the whispers and the muse and the secrets.
Well, the other point that apparently there's a big distinction between people who take DMT and just see kind of shapes and colors and those who actually communicate with these entities. And I don't know what causes this divide between the two groups. Maybe Ian has some insight.
I don't know. My experience with DMT is still really limited. I'm interested in changing that at some point.
So you said that some people don't exist in four dimensions.
Correct.
So they're NPCs?
Yes.
That's a scary thought.
Why is it scary? It's just factual.
What I'm thinking is...
No, I just mean that there are some people out there that, you know, aren't
But doesn't that explain? Doesn't that explain a lot?
It certainly does.
You know,
yeah.
That's what I was saying. That's what I said earlier, that, you know, for me personally, I kind of feel like I have a soul. I feel like there's a greater power out there, and some people don't. Maybe they literally don't have souls.
Right.
I was just thinking, it might be that calcification of the pineal gland has something to do with it, that if you're calcified and you're blocked, you're still seeing the shapes and patterns, but you're not seeing it clear enough to notice that it's... sentient, maybe even. I don't know if the sentient's the right word, but it's not alive. I wouldn't call it alive, but intelligent. Is that a fair word to describe this field, this force, God? Is it God in the image of man? And that's why we think they're elves, because we're getting this undulating fourth dimensional movement of in and out, like
what if,
tightness and expansion.
Yeah. What if it's not necessarily that some people exist in four dimensions, but that some people are ascending? You know what I mean?
That's a good. My understanding is that this is the descending, that we're a same way that a drawing is like a lowering and a projection into 2D. Like if I drew myself, that this life or whatever we want to call it, this plane, is a projection of 4D, which is much more infinite.
So we're like, so we're like playing a video game,
kinda.
So we are all fourth dimensional beings who decided to.
Not all of us.
No. I mean like us here, because we're all special people. You know,
are we? Even this
I'm kidding. Yeah, no, believe it or not, despite the Lucky Charms.
If the theory follows suit and it's...
This is what happens when Seamus smokes DMT.
First of all, no one ever drank coffee and had this conversation. Right? I just want to flag that. Thank
you. You know, coffee is actually attributed with ending the... or starting the Enlightenment, kicking the Enlightenment, Age of Enlightenment off. They would sit around and stop
and those
for
bars,
the first time.
Exactly. You saw that
drinking
video?
Beer. No.
There's a guy who makes like old-timey recipes. And he made one about like the first types of coffee, and he talked about like they would have these coffee bars, and all the people go there to be intellectuals.
Oh yeah, and so what it was up until that point was beer. You know, the water was dangerous to drink, yeah. So people would drink beer, and then eventually they just kicked in the coffee. Coffee became because of probably colonization, and they were able to start importing.
And they're all
coffee.
Tweaking and talking till all hours, running and flapping their gums.
Here's what you know. I suppose
it was the first Timcast.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose logic doesn't matter when you're talking about multidimensional theory.
I disagree. I think it matters a lot. Yeah.
Well, then here's my question. What is the logic behind why some humans would be semi-fourth dimensional? Why would a fourth dimensional being come down to the third dimensional plane for entertainment?
Oh, that's a good question.
Right.
I don't know. That's a great question.
I think that the body is an anchor. This body is an anchor, and that if you're clouded and you're calcified, that you're not in control of the field around you. Like your red blood cells have iron, which are magnetic, and you can not control the magnetic field around you, but interact with it, interface with it. If you're dulled to that ability because, you know, you're clouded, then it might seem like you don't have a soul, but I think people go in and out of either having a soul or not having one, depending on if you're calcified or not. And maybe it's not just calcified.
I don't think people appreciate how much wisdom it is in what Ian says. And the more you watch the show and the more you listen to him, the more like suss it out. This guy knows what he's talking about.
But what, I just
and that's not April
crazy.
Fool's.
I just thought something crazy.
Tomorrow.
I just thought something crazy. I want to imagine that we have a third dimensional plane. Let's put it in like a perspective. Here's the threshold of the dimensional barrier. We're down here milling about like little people, all talking, shaking hands, and watching and observing. Then you move up into the fourth dimensional plane, and you can see there's like tethers coming out of the people into the fourth dimension. From that perspective, it looks like each individual person has some fourth dimensional presence. What if, when you moved up to an even higher state, you can see that all of those lines coming out are connected to the hands of one being, and get this, what the people actually are like sensory antennas that are just dipped into the water to collect information and then come back part of one being.
But the elves are kind of like paper dolls. So like paper dolls is basically, you can one sense it's one being, it's another sense it's individual. You can see one ends of the other. So they kind of meld into each other.
Oh, really?
So is it the kind of thing where if you touch your hands?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
If you touch your hands together, you feel your left hand with your right hand, you can feel it with your right hand, and you can feel your right hand with your left hand. You have both feelings at the same time. But in reality, I can only feel what Ian feels and Tim can only feel what Tim feels.
Yeah.
But in the fourth dimension, there's a being that feels both.
Yes.
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 Correct.
Whoa.
So this is the argument, or is this what people report on DMT, or is
that's
this
the
no? That's
what people report. This, okay. And the thing is that it's very confusing. Not confusing, but there's just a lot of questions about why this substance would have such extreme effects on people, just from an evolutionary perspective.
How does that idea
and why those effects be the same for everybody?
How does that idea jive with your idea on religion and God?
I would say it's probably demonic. I don't know. I don't have an explanation, but if my first guess would be it could be a demonic thing.
What if,
or it could also literally just be hallucinations people are having. I don't know.
No. This idea that we are all one with God, and that he can feel what we feel. He knows what we do and why we do it.
Well, we're created in his image and likeness, and he does know everything.
So could it be that?
Oh, yeah. Well, what number am I thinking of?
Let's roll the dice and find out.
I didn't say I know.
Checkmate.
Wait.
92.
The point was that
Ian got it.
Dude, how freaky would it be if I told you? I was like, is it?
The number was pi.
The idea Ian is saying is that he can feel things, I can feel things, but then a higher power can feel what both of us are feeling.
Yeah, that's, I would imagine that would be possible.
Here is something.
That God could.
Here's something else that's really kind of interesting. There's something, I forget the term I'm.
You
live in the city
this.
For too long, man.
I'm sure Ian knows the term for this. I don't know the term. When two people break the veil together and they meet on the other side, there's a term for that.
Oh, wow.
I need to know.
That's crazy.
Is the word sympathetic involved? No, there's a word for
there's
it.
There's a term. Oh. I forget what it is.
Shared hallucinations.
And there was a – I watched a crazy video from Vice where this guy said that He did DMT and he met a purple woman. I think we talked about this last time.
No, this is not familiar.
He met a purple woman and she talked to him about his friend. And she was like, he used to come by here all the time. And he was like, whoa. And they talked. And then when he came back down, he went to his friend and shared it. They shared information that they hadn't previously exchanged with each other.
Yeah. And a lot of other people report that when they meet the elves, sometimes the elves are like, what are you doing here? Like, how'd you get here? Like, they're surprised.
I feel like, Michael from the archangel from the Bible and his friends would take hallucinogens together and have shared hallucinations. And that was God talking through them, and Michael was the best
in the Bible.
I'm curious why.
What is the history of the archangels? The Old Testament?
Wait, real quick. I just want to point out one thing. Ian often just makes up these like weird religious connections.
Yeah.
Like angels doing DMT. I don't know where that comes from.
I'm very literal and realistic. Like, I'm very into like common sense and realism. So I'm trying to make a realistic story about ancient history that seems kind of almost magical.
But I think you're trying to look at too much through the lens of psychedelics because, A, I mean, you're discounting the possibility for there to be legitimate supernatural experiences, and also you're discounting that if they aren't legitimately supernatural, that maybe somebody made it up. But I think you project psychedelic experience onto basically everything that doesn't fit within the ordinary confines of what we see in everyday life.
I'll be honest, I have been, since I started getting into Terrence McKenna and the stoned ape theory, the idea that hominids at some point started eating psilocybin and gaining consciousness and awareness, that has really turned me on to like looking at the history through that lens now a lot of times. And like when they say they saw Jesus walking on water, like, yo, I took acid. I know what hallucinations are, and when you see people,
but
like,
do
whoa.
People on acid all hallucinate the exact same person doing the exact same thing at the exact same time?
This is what Michael brought up, is that people can break through and have the same experience
on DMT
together.
Though,
but large groups of people, I mean, people hallucinate, but generally when a group of people hallucinate, they don't hallucinate the exact same
thing. But you could, to play devil's advocate, there's also the ability of when a bunch of people are all on psychedelics, the power of persuasion becomes through the roof. So if one person's like, oh, look, I see that. Everyone else will start to see it because the brain will fill in the
Charles
brain.
Manson but, is a
but
fantastic I
also, but don't, also, but I, don't you think if DMT is reused, and I'm not just talking about biblically, but in any scriptural text from any religion, don't you think they would mention psychedelics? Because we know that psychedelics are part of a lot of pagan religions and they discuss it. So if they were part of these other religions and that's how the texts were inspired, why wouldn't that be discussed?
I think
you have to read a lot into it to come away with that conclusion.
Well, because, on the other hand, we don't know what manna is. We don't know anything about it.
Manna from heaven. The manna from heaven. Is that what it was? It was like a hash oil?
We don't know. They literally said they ate manna, came from heaven. Okay, what is it? There's no description of it.
Maybe rainwater mixed with a plant.
What do you
or
think
something
it is?
Boiled.
Famous.
It was always
Lucky
described.
Well, it's like bread, right?
It was always described manna for the Irish. is it potatoes? Is that it?
Well, it was always described to me as almost being bread-like, though I'm far from being an expert on here. And it was food that was given to them as sustenance, not necessarily something to produce psychedelic experience.
No, my understanding, in Jew school, they taught us this, that basically they found that it like spontaneously appeared overnight. So it wasn't absolutely something magical.
Ben Stewart would be good. You would love Ben Stewart if you haven't talked to him yet.
I think, I want to mention this, I think the big difference is, if you're looking at psychedelics, I think someone who believed that they had a supernatural ability would say it's something found in the natural world that leads to the supernatural experience, whereas man is the exact opposite. It's something that appeared supernaturally but gave them the natural experience of eating.
We had a really good idea for a bit on Cast Castle where in the background...
Cast Castle? What's that?
Our vlog.
Okay.
One of the bits is that while stuff is happening in the background, you'll see Seamus interacting with potatoes.
Why does it have to go?
Hold on.
I made this point
can
about...
Can I finish the joke, Seamus?
Just racist.
One of the jokes was that like Ian will be talking to someone about something semi, you know, just inane. And then in the background, you see a pizza delivery guy like handing the pizza to Seamus. And he pulls out a potato and hands it to the pizza guy, who then pulls out two smaller potatoes and hands Seamus back.
Or he opens the pizza box and his potatoes is the topping.
Wouldn't it be hysterical if like I talked about potatoes the way like Ian will bring up psychedelics? I'm like, no, dude, I think they ate potatoes and that's why they saw it happen.
The potatoes has eyes.
You have to try
think
it.
About it.
Why exactly? Because you can see and they have roots. It grounds you.
I think that when the authorities were writing the Bible, that they were like, if they take psychedelics, they're going to overthrow reality because that's what it makes you do.
But
that's what
it
helps people.
I caught that, Lydia.
Hold on. There's two things. First of all, no, secular or religious, there are no scriptural scholars who believe that the Bible is written by a group of authorities. They understand that these texts were not just compiled by one group trying to tell a story. But also, if you're saying the authorities were writing the Bible, that's a different article.
Can you repeat what you said?
So scriptural scholars, including the atheistic ones, don't hold the view that like a group of people got together and said, let's write the Bible and make this
what
story.
Oh, no, that's correct. Yeah.
What about the Council of Nicaea?
That's when they sat down and said what's going in and out.
Exactly. And so Ian, I think part my question is, or I guess my point to you saying, because your question or your point here seems to conflict with the other point you made, because you're saying they got together, they wrote the Bible to have a specific message, and they didn't want us to use psychedelics. But your earlier claim was it actually happened, but these people were just using psychedelics and writing it from their perspective.
Oh, no.
That, or so it didn't actually happen, but this was a drug trip.
I think that the writers, like John, the people that saw Jesus walking were tripping. But then when the Council of Nicaea got together, they were like, that stuff's too dangerous for society to do right now. We need control of this. Let's not talk about the psychedelic stuff.
So the problem I have with that is the people who brought the various scriptures that they had in their possession to the Council of Nicaea were really persecuted in order to have them. So some of them had their eyes gouged out. Some people were killed for having these scriptures because they're being persecuted for their beliefs. And I don't think a text could mean that much to you for you to get together with a group of people and say, you know what, let's just mess with this and have it say whatever we want and remove the important details.
I just want to point out that I see no logical basis for saying people were tripping when they witnessed something.
Well, they said that they saw Jesus walking on water.
So what?
What could you possibly give a logical excuse of how that could happen?
My point is, Ian, you have a bias where you're like, they must have been tripping when, okay.
I don't want to say they must. Maybe they were like all sick, but they used to get together and drink wine. The Elysium.
My point is, you take you have a frame of mind.
That was carbon monoxide.
People are fairly familiar with your frame of mind, and you're like, I think it was tripping, but there's literally infinite number of explanations for why someone could hallucinate something.
You know
that
laughing disease that they had for a while that was ergot? A lot of this stuff comes from ergot, which is a fungus that grows on rye that makes people trip out, but it's also very harsh on your stomach, and they would drink it with wine.
But I think, Ian, the problem with that is when you look at literally any historic document we have, you can make the same argument. Even if it's describing something which seems perfectly natural. Well, this person could have just been hallucinating because they were on drugs. We don't know that they're describing this properly.
Yeah, I don't want to come out and say it happened like that.
I think you have to have a specific reason besides saying this text is difficult to believe to make the case that the people who wrote it were on drugs.
For instance, the burning bush. I've heard that it was the acacia plant, which if you burn it and breathe it in, you start to have psychoactive hallucinations, and that Moses was sitting by a bush to start talking to him, and then he started hearing God, like, yo, I've heard God at Burning Man. I took a bunch of mushrooms for a week, and you start to hear the vibration make sentient sound. It's, I don't know where it's coming from or what, but it is a real thing, and I was on psychoactives at the time. The burning bush?
My point is, whether you have a supernatural worldview, I believe it was God, but I think even if you don't believe it was God, you can have explanations aside from this must have been
drug
induced.
Moses is lying. Or it could be a crazy person.
Exactly. I mean, if it could be it really happened, or it could be it didn't happen.
Or someone made it up about Moses to make it sound smarter.
Exactly. Well, because we know historically that people will make stories up. And so if you don't believe these stories are true because you don't think what's described could possibly have happened, there are so many other explanations besides they were on drugs, they were doing
I found some stuff on manna.
You guys need to have your long religious debate.
Let me read this about manna really quick. It's from Exodus 16:14. When the dew evaporated, a flaky substance as fine as frost blanketed the ground. Okay, so they're talking about, like, if you put alcohol, they're talking about that's how you make DMT. You extract the white powdery substance.
I'm just pointing out the similarities.
Exodus 16:31, the Israelites called the food manna. It was white like coriander seed, and it tasted like honey. So it's like a white powder. And that sounds like a drug experience.
You can't live on DMT. The whole point is manna was giving them sustenance in the desert. So even if what you're saying is true, they'd all be dead.
Or it could have been mixed with a drug. Like ergot grows on rye. So they could have been eating rye that was infected with ergot.
But then they would say what they're eating.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move forward. I'm just curious, your thoughts, Michael.
I think we should do an entire Tim cast about manna.
Yes. With DMT, what do you think happens when you die?
What does that do with DMT?
Well, like, if we are meat puppets in the third dimension,
sure.
When you die, do we just like wake up in the fourth dimension as machine elves or something? Or
one of the things that they beat into us in Jew school, and this is something that I very much do prefer the Jewish perspective to the Christian perspective, is I've used this story before. Is let's suppose you go to this banquet. And the table is just overflowing with food, and there's every kind of fruit you can imagine, and the wine's flowing, and you got a turkey here, and you got a steak here, and hams and everything. And it's just like you couldn't even begin to imagine this kind of banquet. And then you go to the chef, you go, oh, what's for dessert? like how offensive that is. Mm. So in the Jewish perspective, to be like focusing on the afterlife when God has given you this amazing gift of life and how wondrous it is and how he wants you to be happy and achieve and just thrive, and to just be looking toward dessert is really like spitting in his face.
I once had a very Christian friend of mine tell me that she couldn't wait until she died.
When Ayn Rand was on Donahue and he asked her, he goes, what's wrong with saying, you know, I love life, everything's great, but man, I can't wait to die and find out what's going on. She goes, that's the problem. He's like, what do you mean? You can't wait to die. Like, she's like, you said it unintentionally. And I'm not saying Seamus saying this, Christian, but this is a big concern because life is not a dress rehearsal. And I think if you are a believer, God put you here for a reason. And to just think that this is just kind of, you know, the warm-up act can have some very dangerous consequences.
I think a simple way to look at it for secular individuals maybe is like a sorting algorithm.
When they
say heaven and hell, you don't even have to look at it like damnation or, you know, salvation or whatever. It's just like a sorting algorithm. Some people go here, some people go there.
I think it's an interesting point. I would argue, and you acknowledge this, that you don't think this is the case for all religious people. I would say that you should, of course, be very grateful for your life. I mean, a belief in the afterlife should not prevent you from saying, like, this is just an unbelievable gift in general. And eternal life, as we believe as Catholics, is very much a part of that
Is there going to be a but?
Huh?
There's a butt coming.
I would say what I disagree with is that a belief in an afterlife necessitates a rejection of gratitude for this life.
Yeah, we actually talked last night about some people that are just living for the now and take. They're not. It used to be that, like, hey, do good
time
in this life because
Hoppa.
When you die, if you didn't do good in this life, you're going to be punished. Mm-hmm. So people wouldn't overthrow and burn things down. These people, I don't know if you call them godless, but if it's just all about now with nothing to work.
We would agree on this, that you have to be grateful for and appreciate life, but you have to be willing to sacrifice it if there's a necessary cause. Like, you'd have to be willing to fight for your family. If someone's trying to kill your family, it wouldn't be right to run away.
Let me simplify it. If you believe there is something beyond you, then you would recognize the other person's individual rights and liberties.
Mm.
So for me, that's kind of my worldview. Like, why would I respect someone else's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is because I want them to respect mine. If you don't think anyone else exists or matters, you'll be solely egotistical and strive for power and personal gain at any cost.
Are there other sects of Judaism that do believe in an afterlife in a more overt sense?
Oh, they all believe in an afterlife to some extent, like but they don't focus on it anywhere near as much. And one of the versions I've heard is that everyone goes to hell and your sins are burnt off. And if you're really bad, you're burnt to a crisp. But then everyone goes to heaven and there's levels of heaven. But there's very little focus on the afterlife in Judaism.
Like, if the soul
Old Testament
is an energy field that it's getting like coursed through the earth's core, you're sensing that hellish fire, and then it courses through the galactic core and you burn with fiery rage, and then you're let off into the universe. And
I would not say it's an exact equivalent, but that's interesting because that is sort of similar to the idea of purgatory, though we don't believe everyone goes there. We believe some people do go to hell.
It's like if you went into the forest and you got covered in those little brambles all over you, those spiky little things. And then they're like, you're like, I can't get them off. So someone just takes a flamethrower and just burns you until they all get roasted. And then you're like,
thank you.
Well, yeah, and I guess the difference is
exactly like that.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
literally that. That's in the Talmud.
Makes you better.
Why Elon's building a flamethrower?
I guess I can't speak for the Talmud, but I know like the purgation that Catholics describe as something that it purges you of your sin, but it doesn't leave you less than you were. Which I would imagine is what you guys are also arguing, though, that it makes you better because it's getting rid of the
like. What is it like? Like a giant purifying workout? Like a solar workout? S O U L A R.
It's a Pendleton.
A Pendleton? What's that?
Isn't that bike? With that
guy? Did you see the commercial?
Peloton. Whatever.
Where have you been, Ian?
Pendleton's the sweaters.
So it's like, you know, they say resistance is necessary for growth. Mm-hmm. I wonder if your soul experiences heavy resistance after death in order for it to be purified.
What if?
And the resistance is a form of heat, which they call hell.
We are not projections of fourth dimensional beings. Fourth dimensional beings are just controlling avatars. And so, like, when we die, we're nothing. We're just... And the fourth dimensional being was like, that was cool. That was Michael Mellis.
But that's like if you do a drawing of yourself and have a comic strip where Tim, you know, and Ian are going to the store, blah, 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 and then you rip up the comic strip, Tim and Ian are still existing.
Is like, you, Michael, being controlled by a fourth dimensional being...
Not
like,
controlled, that projection.
But what I'm saying is, like, when I play a video game, sure, like, the character on the screen is a projection of my will in the game. But when the character gets mutilated and erased, I just get up and I'm like, bye, and the character's gone. So for you or me in this world, once we're done, there's going to be like some fat fourth dimensional dude in his basement going like, guys, I got, oh, that was cool. I got to level 50.
There are no fat people in the fourth dimension. That I can assure you.
You know what
believe
I mean?
Me.
I'm making a joke.
I've never seen a fat person in the fourth dimension.
It's ridiculous. I've never heard such a thing.
How you said
fat people in the fourth dimension.
Remember the video of Trump playing the accordion?
Yeah.
That's so good.
I've never seen a thin person in the third dimension,
quite frankly. Tim, would that be such a bad thing? If this was basically just a big video game and then, you know, us as avatars vanish and then the fourth dimensional Tim is still around, he gets another shot at it?
Yeah, but what I mean is we are not the fourth dimensional character.
We're a projection of them.
My character in a video game dies, its consciousness doesn't transport into my body and go, wow, I remember everything. No, it's just gone. You're dead.
But if you're playing the video game like Zelda and Link dies, you, Tim, remember the entire experience.
And you're Link, not the player.
Correct.
Not Tim.
Right.
So Tim gets up and leaves and you, Link, you're gone.
Yeah, but I would rather be the player than be Link.
I think you're both.
That's what I'm saying.
In that situation.
What I'm saying is, if Link in the game.
I'm so scared of what the chat's looking like right now.
Does not
have looked at it yet.
I'm so scared.
What I'm saying is, based on your logic, you are an avatar for someone else.
Correct.
Not yourself.
No.
When you die, you die. There's no. You're not a fourth dimensional being. A fourth dimensional being is puppeting you.
No. If I'm making a video recording of you, that is still a recording of you. It's not Tim and Link. It's video Tim and flesh Tim.
What you're describing is more like a fourth dimensional being has entered the third dimension.
Yes. Yes.
And what I'm saying is, what if it's not like that? What if it's a fourth dimensional being taking a controller and controlling you, and then when you die, he puts the controller down and leaves?
Okay.
Right. We're all NPCs. Some are just guided by...
No, if we're guided, then we're the PCs. That's what the PC means.
Yes, but you don't exist outside of this world, is what
correct.
I'm saying.
But we don't exist outside this world.
Oh, so that's actually what it is. You're not a fourth dimensional being.
Well, you've got to define you.
Right. I'm watching a videotape of Tim, that videotape character doesn't exist in this three-dimensional
world. What I thought you were saying is that there's fourth dimensional beings basically playing a VR game.
I'm not sure at all of the exact relationship at all.
I wonder if we are apparitions of a fourth dimensional energy force or something. Like, why is it twisting together in the shape that it is? Why is matter bound in these boundary conditions? Like, skin, why does it stop here? Why is it forming into atoms like where it is? I don't understand why. There must be a god. I mean, it always comes back like, why? There, it can't be no reason. I mean, well, maybe it can.
Well, as kind of, it's hard to describe what you just said. You came to a conclusion that, you know, God.
I made statements that I didn't back up, basically, and then said,
no, but
so
I mean,
why?
Like, a lot of these questions have answers, but not. It's you know, if we talk about the fundamental forces of the universe that we think we know as humans through science,
yeah,
you
subatomic
know,
forces like
or radiation
and
or
leptons.
Gravity or whatever, then there's still questions on where those forces lead to after
exactly.
that.
Sure, like they're spinning. They call them spinners, these subatomic things, quarks, leptons. And so they're spinning and they form into protons or electrons, depending on the subatomic spin mechanism. But why? I just still haven't figured it out.
I got a question. Seamus, if you think or suspect that psychedelics have some kind of demonic aspect to them, does that mean you will never try them?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Are you sure? Never? Never is a pretty extreme statement.
Never, never.
What if the church were like, mushrooms are now...
I don't think they could. I don't think they could.
This Pope? There's a lot this Pope can do. Am I wrong? I'm not even joking.
Well, so there are certain teachers, like there are things that... If the church has established something like as an infallible teaching, they can't go back on it. He can add to things,
sure.
Or he can, you know, issue statements about administrative things or his opinion on something, but they can't like reverse a teaching that was already there.
I thought they said limbo no longer exists.
That's a really good question. So there's an argument about this. It's not the case that Catholics can't believe in limbo. And as far as I understand it, again, there are people far more educated than me on this who will argue that it is something Catholics should believe. It's not mandated by the church, but it also wasn't the church taking something that was in the magisterium and saying, no, like the opposite is now true.
Or do they about psychedelics and say don't do it?
Yeah. Well, there's a passage in the catechism about drugs.
We got to go to Super Chat. So if you haven't already,
the argument is psychedelics aren't drugs, but they're medicine. Go ahead.
Smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends if you really like it. Become a member at timcast.com to support our work directly because we are principally supported by our members. I'm going to read one Super Chat from the most recent conversation first before going back to the beginning. Jacob LaBelle says, I only did DMT once. I didn't trip. I just blanked out and collapsed. Does this mean I'm an NPC and have no soul? Kind of freaking, to be honest.
No, you should have been sitting down when you were doing yes. it.
Next question. Oh, sorry, Jacob.
Were you standing? You said he collapsed.
Blanked out and collapsed.
Always be sitting down, I would think, if you were going to do something like that.
All right.
Jacob just hit Control-Alt-Delete.
Here we go. We got Bontito Freak says, hey, Tim and crew, I've been trying to reach you guys about openings for video game artists. This is my @ on Twitter to discuss more. I've also DM'd about it. At GuadMoon27. Seamus, what's going on with that art for that video game?
We're working on it right now. Basically, we've been really slammed, but I just got a list of things from Chris and Andy that we are going to try to get patched up so we can get this thing.
How can you do something called Freedom Tunes and not once animate the best anarchist ever?
You've never asked. Oh, I've hit you up. I've hit you up. I've been like, Malice, come on, let's collaborate.
Hit me up.
I think I messaged you a while ago. We've talked about collaborating.
Did you know like that this the first time
we are producing a video game together?
Dead to me.
Sitting across from them.
Is it called Unlucky Charms?
Wow. Did we say the
name? Well, hold on. No one said the luck of the Irish was good luck.
Did we say the name of the game yet?
About that. Look at history, all right?
Have we released the name yet?
Of the game?
Yeah.
Let's keep it as much of it under wraps.
It might be in the vlog.
It's called The Troubles.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's
the game is basically, it's a platformer where you play as Seamus and you gotta catch your lucky charms.
Oh.
It's you have
not
to guess it's called there
not
after.
Not the game at all. Not the game at all.
Not even close.
All right, let's read some more. W Falcon 59 says, hey, Tim, here's what may be some good news. CNN Plus is advertising on your show on Spotify. Ooh. I think you won.
Oh, wow.
I love it.
CNN is like, we know that you hate us. Please watch us. Yeah. I just love the idea that CNN is doing third-party advertising on my show because it's ineffective, 100% ineffective. CNN, if you're listening.
Take their money.
I know. I'm like, no single person who's going to watch or listen to this show is also going to be like, you know, I heard an ad for CNN Plus and I decided it's a good thing.
I'm convinced.
Yeah. All right. Let's read some more. Where we got? Mr. Grizzly Bear says you should call your coffee shop Cast Coffee. Ooh, well, all right then.
That's terrible.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Cast, like Tim these. Cast. Okay. That's better.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm into like,
well, so I was talking earlier brands. when Starbucks announced that they were supporting the protest against parental rights and education. Daily Wire says they're going to do their own kids content. I was like, why don't we open our own coffee chain?
Of course, yeah.
You open one and you just open more.
You know what to call it.
Cast Coffee?
No, the coffee beanie.
Yes.
Oh,
I love it. That's good.
Come on. That's a no-brainer.
I like it. I love
brilliant.
It.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
That's right.
All right. Daniel Ashley says, love to see Michael Malice. There you go. Anthony Rondinelli says, congrats on your 500th episode.
Woo.
Love you all. Here is to 500 more.
Yeah, that's man. That's great.
All right. Okay, some of these super chats I just can't read. They're confusing to me, so I'm just going to go past them. Just mentioning that Michael looks really good today.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, he does.
What else is new?
All right.
I am an underwear model.
That's all right. True, yeah.
Durafity says, if Seamus ever does the Jordan Peterson prank calls, he needs to ask for Red Lobster gift cards.
Oh, my
yes. God.
That is true.
You have to go. Yeah. You need to go to Red Lobster right now. Listen to me. We've accidentally over-deposited in your account by $10,000. It was an accident.
No. He's got to be like, my car's broken down, and I need your help. You know, and then they're like, how do I help? Just go to Red Lobster and buy gift, you know, go to Walmart, get a Red Lobster.
You need Red Lobster gift cards. You have to sell them to me now.
All right. Dan Karna says, which journo would be Press Secretary Malice's most formidable foe?
Formidable. That's a great, great question. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head because I think that if someone had tough questions, I would honestly say, let me get back to you. Let me do the research. And I'd want to give them that information because if they're coming at me honestly with journalism, I would respect them. So I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
All right. Here we go. It's a evil zombie hamster says, finally paid off the truck last week. Here's this paycheck's truck payment to something worthy of it. Oh, love you guys, especially you. Lord Ian, ruler of 1 square foot in Scotland.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. Keep up the good work, guys. I'm always excited when I hear Seamus' voice on here. It's always a good episode.
Oh, thank
I
love you.
And that is true. I'm a Scottish lord. Yeah. I bought a 1 foot by 1 foot square piece of land in Scotland. Balling. Lord, you can call me Lord Ian.
You're
Cross
a modern day
like.
Count Dankula.
Yeah, he is Lost, indeed, yes.
Lost Valley says, Malice at the Cast Castle, a.k.a. Malice in the Palace.
You Ooh. Know it.
There was a bar in New York called No Malice Palace where I had my birthday 1 year.
That's awesome. It.
All right.
That's true anarchism.
Jason. Disneyland lifer and Disney Parks fan here. Not a Disney fan. Went back into the park in July. There were new faces and unfriendly environment. the CMs and lifers have suspected since before the pandemic that corporate has been up to something. You know what? You know, I've been mentioning recently, I did a segment on this today, that have you seen the people on TikTok acting like animated characters?
No.
There's something called like the 12 principles of animation.
Scary.
And this trend emerged where young people started acting like they're in Disney Pixar films. So you know the characters and those things.
Yeah.
So they started doing it, and now young people are actually literally adopting the behavior because they see TikTokers doing it.
Good Lord.
So they're developing like tics.
Yeah.
Almost.
And
you know?
So like the 12 principles of animation are in large part to make your visuals look more lifelike, but it's also the case that in animation, you want your poses to read really well. So you'll have them move in ways that a person wouldn't move in real life just to communicate the expression.
Right.
So, for example, like ideally, the expression should be recognizable via silhouette. If you didn't see that person's face, you should best be able to tell from their body how they're feeling. It's very like almost vaudevillian.
Yeah. Theatrical.
Yes, exactly.
It's the same in theater. It's when like you're theater acting. Actor, you make your arms huge because you want to project. And it doesn't translate on video, which you can see with these people.
Mm-hmm. The coffee beanie.
Yeah.
And we'll open a bunch and we'll just be like, we're not playing any stupid woke stuff. We're just going to sell cappuccinos or something.
Caffeine beans.
Would you like a sour lid on that?
Yes.
I really
exactly.
I want to make bowls saying. That are upside down beanies because I wanted to pour Lucky Charms
into
one of those.
You
want
to pack
today.
A bowl in?
Yeah. Yeah. I want to pack it with Lucky Charms.
That's right,
Michael.
I'm not even kidding about this. I'm not even kidding about opening a chain of coffee shops.
I love the idea
because I was talking about doing a sandwich shop before, so that we could just do whatever we wanted. It would be so amazing to have subsidized sandwich shop where I can like a Karen comes in and is like, there was too much mayonnaise. And I'll be like, and?
I wonder if you could buy like buy a coffee farm in South America and just import your own coffee beans.
We'll set up the first store and it'll be the coffee beanie, a physical location that sells just coffee goods like Starbucks would, but we exclusively source Krigler coffee.
Brilliant. Which is great coffee, by the way. Krigler coffee.
Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
All right, let's read some more super chats. Scott James says, happy 500th episode to Shimcast IRL. And shout out to Ian on the Chrissy Mayer podcast. Fun episode. Also at Tim and Ian, give Babylon 5 a watch. If you like DS9, then you should like B5. DS9 actually ripped it off. Look it up.
Okay, nerd.
I also
nerd.
I would just like for everyone to take a moment to reflect on Shimcast reaching its 500th episode and what an achievement that is for me.
You've done a really good job.
Thank you.
You have a great producer.
Thanks for hiring me.
Good at the helm.
Thanks for bringing me into this. Actually,
I'm not going to make my Shimcast joke.
Don't do it.
All right. The Teeth Grinder says umpteenth unread super chat with a crying face, and then he says Michael's cosplay wins today's internet. Massive love and hugs to Tim, Lids, Ian, Seamus, Luke, and Absentia. And all at Timcast from Great Britain. I don't know what he means by Michael's cosplay though. What is that?
What are you talking about?
It means
it's
something
British.
Different in British.
Oh,
yeah, it's like the hood of a car.
Lost in translation.
Like a boot. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
Sorry. Otherwise,
thank you.
Winking Walrus says, "You guys hear about Alabama constitutional carry like a couple weeks ago? Goes into effect January 1st.
Cool.
So next year. But this is what half the country now
that
constitutional
is half the
carry.
Country, yeah.
Wow.
25 states, amazing. I believe."
All right. Dragon Lady says, happy 500th. So, Seamus, will you ever do more debunkers videos? Spent several hours last night watching them. They're great. And, guys, what happened with the blurry Chicken City Cam this morning? Finally, Malice, you rock. Chicken City Camera got wet. And so we just swapped it out.
And
because outside cameras break.
And we are producing more debunker videos. Those are a lot of fun. I know we haven't done one in over a year, but
what are they? I don't know about these.
Oh, so one of our videos that we'll release, or one of the series we do, is it's these two intellectuals who sit in their bunker. They're hiding from the general public because they don't want to catch the stupid. And in order to stay sharp, they watch YouTube videos and debunk them. And so that we'll take videos that have a lot of nonsense in them that are popular and being shared around, and we'll have them watch it and pause the video and then comment on it. Explain
what
why
Jeopardy?
There's a lot of research that goes into those, which is part of why it's difficult to put them together, but we have a couple of them in the works right now.
Are those Freedom Tunes also?
Yeah, they're on the Freedom Tunes channel. Those so from awesome. An animation perspective, they're much easier, but from a writing and research perspective, they're much more difficult.
All right. Liberty or Death says, Malice looks like a post-apocalyptic version of Tim Pool from a Star Trek episode who came through a temporal distortion to warn us about the Marxists.
Yeah. I think it's the beard.
Yeah,
which looks great, by the way.
I can't wait to shave this. I've been
so
in hell
method.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, that's you can always get a Jeremy's razor.
That's true.
From the Daily Wire crew.
That's true.
That's a great point. Yeah,
that's a great idea.
You'd
be a razor model.
G says, yeah. When did Tim get a twin? What do you mean? Ian's been on the show for a while.
Yeah, at least a year and a half.
Yeah,
2 years.
I was just saying they all look alike.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I actually, you're Irish, right?
I am.
Is that true?
And German. Yeah. Oh,
cool.
Yeah.
Irish, why don't you guys insult him about this? You know what's crazy? I know that it is considered in bad taste. Like people were
his name is
from
Seamus.
Ireland. I know. It's not my fault. I didn't pick this for myself.
You should pick a
Here we
meeting.
Go.
Trust me on that one.
Sideways says, Malice not liking anime? Dang, man, that's a real boomer cringe take. You just went from a pretty cool guy to, I guess he's all right. He's got some good ideas and makes me giggle, LMAO.
It's not boomer.
LMAO? Jeez, that's not boomer
that
cringe?
That cringe is, yeah.
You're Gen X, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Me too. Gen Xers.
Yeah.
You rep X hard.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, look at that.
True Patriot says, Michael Malice for press secretary after Psaki leaves.
Dave Smith has not returned 2 texts and 2 emails.
He's been busy.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
He's going to be the president.
No further information.
Me either. Yeah.
He's too busy, like, walking with, like, a camera shot, like, the West Wing as he's preparing.
I wanted to get him on my show last week. I can't get a hold of him.
He has 2 kids it's now.
Like Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, but I'm more important than his children.
Okay. You know, Teddy Roosevelt, while he was in office, would just leave the White House for weeks at a time and go hunting, and no one knew where he was.
That's great.
Not true.
I love it.
Yeah, he would leave for, like, at least a week at a time. I don't know.
Okay.
Here we go.
President?
Yeah, while he was president. They were like, where is he?
Ian Kinney says Thomas Massey and
wait,
Justin.
Hold on. Well, I know that's not okay.
Biden will leave and get lost for like 2 weeks at a time.
I'm going to double check that because I've heard that.
I know
I
he didn't leave America. So if he's hunting, he's
no,
hunting
he would hunt out west.
Okay.
He'd like go out west.
That might be possible.
That makes sense. Tim's checking something. Apparently.
Nice.
Yeah. Some Ian Kinney says Thomas Massey and Justin Amash tweeted about the Moore Act. If you want to know,
oh,
cool.
I'm
Thank
curious.
You guys.
Yeah.
Amash is a cool dude. I was just on his podcast a couple weeks ago.
I haven't met him yet. Awesome.
Massey is great. If he didn't
Massey
vote for
unfollowed
this,
me because he got butthurt when I was making jokes about Ron Paul.
Oh,
but the jokes weren't about Ron Paul. They're about Joe Biden. Oh,
Thomas Massey said the Moore Act is supposed to make marijuana more legal, but it creates more crimes, more federal taxes, more government spending, and more central planning.
Hmm,
yeah, the federal taxes. Yep.
Yeah.
But it makes more crimes. Probably through taxes.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I knew there was going to be something about it.
Some catch.
It looks so good at face value. They're so good at that, at crafting them to look good at face value.
Of course, they always look good.
That's their biggest skill.
I know. Yeah.
Making evil things
Equality,
seem like, how could you possibly be against this?
Not only their biggest skill, their only one.
Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
All right. Orange Juice 410404 says, listening to yesterday's IRL episode, Google Podcasts, I find it ironic that an ad for CNN Plus played, and I quote, get access to live news and shows from trusted journalists. Talk about out of touch.
That's crazy.
Love the idea that someone at CNN was like, can we buy ads on Tim Pool's show? He really hates us. Like, what did they
They must have bought a mass batch.
Yeah,
for sure.
They probably didn't.
Or maybe they were
just said news and politics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But good. I'm glad they're doing it. When Bloomberg did that big campaign and people were like, Tim, Bloomberg ads are appearing on your videos. And I was like, great.
Yeah.
Because it's basically this. You can watch a video game video and get a Bloomberg ad. And then you're just listening to BS. Or you can listen to a Bloomberg ad and then see me debunk it.
Yeah.
So good. I'll take his money.
I want to shamelessly self-promote here. But when those ads were going out, we made a Freedom Tunes cartoon about his ads. I really want you guys to go check that out.
That one's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tim's doing the research again.
Yeah.
It was Barack Obama that told me, not me directly, that Roosevelt would go on these leave the White House for like a week at a time.
I like it. Barack Obama told me.
Yeah.
I don't mean me directly. I'm like, what do you mean by that
Barack
term?
I found Barack Obama on a hunting trip. He's like, Roosevelt, you should do it.
Yeah.
No one knew where he went. But he was still a great president.
I'm going to back this up because it's
even though he was a Republican.
He was gone.
No, when Obama got in, he was like, my favorite president is Abraham Lincoln. And then when he left, he said, my favorite president was Teddy Roosevelt. Because when he came in, he was ready to do it and whatever it took. And then he got co-opted and he's like, no, let's just be the boisterous. Yeah, that he said those things.
Teddy Roosevelt got shot and he finished the speech.
He sure did.
Whoa.
True story.
Obama would have done
All right,
that.
We got Venice Beach Dub Club.
Lydia, that's dark.
It's true.
You were advocating
you
for Obama.
No.
Good Lord, we all heard it.
Oh my gosh. All right, Michael, thank you.
All right,
you're
Venice,
welcome. You meant finish the speech, I guess.
Venice Beach Dub Club says, Tim's theory about DMT amount present in your system relating to your connection to God equals midichlorians and the Force from Star Wars Episode 1.
Oh, God.
That's
Is
exactly
everyone
right.
watching the show a nerd?
Yeah.
I hated
news,
that
sorry.
Midichlorian thing.
Could you guys,
right.
could you imagine being as uncultured as Michael Malice?
Dude, what if you could have so much DMT access that you were a Jedi?
That's the most Ian thing I've ever
yeah,
heard you
I'm
say.
There's
sure
like
that,
a,
that's peak
there's like a chemical, like a med, like a Russian military chemical called AMT, amethyltryptamine, which is apparently like the limitless drug where people will be like for 12 hour states, they'll have like everything will synchronize and crazy.
Is that like kind of like ayahuasca?
I don't know. I think it's more like DMT, but like extended DMT.
But DMT is like ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, ayahuasca makes you produce long-form DMT.
Yeah.
All right. KKC says, Tim trying to describe DMT in the multiverse just feels like the Time Lords and the Untempered Schism, but with more steps.
By the way, I want to say something that's going to upset every single person listening to this and everyone in this room, which is we are about 2 years out, 3 years out, from corporate psychedelics.
Mm. Oh, what kind?
Mm-hmm. Which is going to be the biggest nightmare that has ever existed.
And they're going to be in the metaverse with psychedelics.
Oh, God.
I know. I think we're headed there. But I think there's... I don't think it's too much of a stretch at all because there is...
It's not a stretch.
There's something very consumerist about the idea, too.
Of course.
About the idea of taking psychedelics in general. Like, I have a product I can give you that will give you spiritual enlightenment. Like, it is a product. You will take it and then you'll come out
they're already already tourists to reality to begin with. So it's not much of a stretch at all.
Brandon Lesko says, we're from the 4D government and we're here to help.
Thank you, Brandon.
Is there a fourth dimensional government?
Yeah, probably.
With the machine elves?
Yeah.
Yeah, the UN.
All right. Dude, Bobcat says,
what are those ads going to be like?
Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
Breakthrough and achieve enlightenment.
Oh, my God. Sponsored by Whole Foods.
Lucky Charms with DMT.
Bobcat says, as a TimCast member, I would like to thank Tim, the science pool, for giving failed cartoonists like Seamus a job in these trying times.
Oh. First of all, Tim came to me begging Seamus, they're going to turn the lights out. They're going to turn them out. I need another role. I said, I created a character. I said, what if he's a little gremlin type named Dr. Fauci? He's a fun character. People love him. It's how Tim got his name, okay?
Auntie C says, the book of Hebrews in the Bible says this world is a shadow of the original heaven.
Is that right?
In heaven.
What verse?
Is that true, Seamus?
I would looked up the verse in translation. I'm not sure.
What book of the Bible is that?
The book of Hebrews in the Bible.
Oh, wow. That's
interesting. Says this world is a shadow of the original in heaven.
I believe that's correct.
I truly believe that they were on psychedelics.
We heard you.
Daily.
Ian, you believe everyone's on psychedelics.
I thought that it was like a part of their diet. Like they were always on it.
If that was true, they would still be on it because Judaism really has kept a straight line in many ways from those times. Yeah. Especially the people at the top, like the very religious ones.
Like the Kabbalah, is that what it is?
That's Middle Ages. That came much later.
All right. Adam Milne says, Michael should reach out to Destiny for an interview. His recent Twitch ban would be a fantastic conversation for your welcome.
Okay.
You familiar with Destiny?
I know the name. I did a live stream. I was signing books with Blair. She was helping me in LA. And people said I should have him on the show.
Oh. Yeah, I think you'd have a really
I said it wouldn't be a bad idea because I know he's done Jesse Lee Peterson's show and they had a good time.
He's I think he knows a lot. He knows what he's talking
about. Would you recommend him?
Yeah, that's
all I need to hear. Okay.
But he's more of like an establishment lefty kind of personality.
But as long as he's not going to be an ass, I'm fine with it.
Awesome. I mean,
what?
How do you describe Destiny? He's aggressive.
Am I going to regret having him
he's
on?
He's verbose.
I don't think so. I think you'll really enjoy having him on.
Yeah, if we disagree, I don't care. I just don't need him to be like a jerk about it.
So we had him here and he talked about how COVID and the emergency is the perfect time to have government come in and make all these changes because when else would you do it?
True.
He's pro woke, so he knows what critical race theory is and he likes and agrees with it. And he also said Kyle Rittenhouse was the clearest cut case of self defense he's ever seen.
So okay, anyone who is even a little on their own path, I like those kind of people.
Yeah,
and I don't have to agree with
him. And Twitch bans him all the time because. Okay. He doesn't.
How do I reach out? I'll figure it out how to get hold of him.
He's got a big subreddit, but I think you guys have a great conversation.
Okay, that's a no-brainer then.
Yeah, you know, we had him here. A lot of people thought it was going to be this like generic right versus left or like libertarian versus authoritarian, and it's like we agreed on a lot of things.
Yeah, I get along very well with red-pilled leftists, even if they're a little bit red-pilled.
I don't know if he's a leftist though. I mean, maybe he is.
If he's for critical race theory, he's not a right winger.
That's true. Yeah. All right. NOS says, some people who are religious think that we are spiritual beings having a human experience. We come to this earth to have have human experiences, maybe from the DMT source, IDK.
So did you look up the shadow thing in Hebrews?
Let me pull it up. I looked it up immediately, got back to the conversation. I'm also not sure which verse they're referring to.
Would you look up the word shadow in that chapter, in that book, rather?
Shadow. All right. Sargon of Assyria says... What?
Well, instead of Sargon of Akkad, Sargon of Assyria?
No, I don't know. I guess. Maybe.
It's just funny.
Yep.
Happy Akitu, everyone. It is the Assyrian New Year. It is still celebrated in northern Iraq, Assyria. With the help of Gishru.com, many of us in diaspora get to celebrate this festival with our people back home. This podcast is amazing. Thank you all. Heart. Hey, thank you very much.
Thanks, man. And shout out to all the refugees from Iraq and Iran who are making it happen. They can't live in their homeland, so I can relate to that. All the cool Persians out there.
Forrest Horlacher says, whoa, joined late and feel like I'm the one who's high with all the drug god talk and seeing two Tims. Love y'all. Keep up the good fight. Even Michael. If you're seeing two Tims, maybe something's wrong with your eyes.
Keep up the good fight, even Michael?
Wow. Okay.
What does that even mean?
Didn't need the support or something.
Oh, okay.
Even you're fine.
Michael, who hates fighting. Or is only on the bad fight.
Yeah, only the bad fight.
Brett Ain't Dead says, smoked DMT multiple times. One time I was abducted, taken into space, my soul in between the space between space, chanted to in a language older than time. We are energy, finite. I did it by myself, FYI. God is real.
How would you liken it, Michael? I guess you have maybe more experience than anyone here with it, particularly. A dream, to dimethyltryptamine.
No, I don't.
Okay. Imagine that you did.
Okay.
How would you liken it to a dream?
My understanding is it's extremely different because dreams are much more ephemeral. You can't really remember it. Sometimes you know. And I think when people break the veil, they know they're breaking the veil. When you're dreaming, you don't always know you're dreaming. And I think dreams are less coherent than DMT trips, my understanding.
I've never DMT tripped, but a long time ago I did a bunch of things to make it so that you lucid dream more often. And so like basically all of my dreams are lucid dreams. But there's like basic things you do. One, you're like wearing a watch all the time, and then you'll just like snap it. And so then when you have a dream, you'll look at your wrist and you'll see it and you'll be like, this is not working right. I'm dreaming. And instantly you come out of it. And there's other things you can do. It's called walking into a dream. It's where you just use your imagination as you're going to sleep and craft the dream as you enter the sleep state. So these are things that
I'd be interested to see studies on DMT experience while you're already sleeping, to have it like an injection in some way.
Oh, that's a great question.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Who's doing those studies?
I think in England they've been doing some extended state stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
But how can we trust the studies? What if they're just saying the study happened, but they took DMT and wrote down the hallucination?
Got to do it for myself to know. Yeah, exactly.
He didn't get it.
I was already confirmed that I'm going to do it myself. I'd have to in that case.
All right.
I got you, Shane.
Forced Name Change says, hey, guys, we live in a 3D universe consisting of three axes at 90 degrees to each other. There is one more dimension at 90 degrees to these inwards. That's why you feel a spirit in you and makes black holes 4D objects.
Yeah, it's a spiral. That one going in, it's not a straight line in. None of those lines are straight in the three-dimensional, the Z, XYZ axis. None of them are straight lines. They seem straight, but they're not. And the one going in is like a corkscrew, I think. They can expand and contract. But then I guess they all could.
Paul McGrath says, in the Bible, the word for witchcraft can be translated as pharmaceutical. Or just as translated pharmaceutical. Is that what you mean?
That seems crazy.
I don't know about that.
I'm interested in a citation.
You still haven't found it, James?
Yeah. Well, so I just searched Book of Hebrews and Shadow, and I found two verses so far, neither of which seem to say that the world is a shadow, so I'm still looking.
We got trolled.
I'm looking for it, too.
So I have to be very careful about this.
Kneeboopsh says, the Irishman's dilemma. What? Should I eat the potato now, or should I wait for it to ferment and drink it later?
Oh.
It's really offensive.
It's not a dilemma. You wait for it to ferment. Come on.
But Irish people don't drink vodka.
Yeah, someone made that joke about how is it that you live in a country where all the food is based on potatoes, you haven't figured out vodka. I forgot who that was. It was someone.
That's funny,
because he already
too.
Had enough whiskey.
Yeah.
K. Goblin says, the Bible was written by a series of multiple authorities separated over time across the centuries. Cribbing off the last edits made, authority definitely had an influence, just not one authority.
That's what I thought it was. But, I mean, the original authorities were just people that hung out with Jesus.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Like, how are they defining authorities? Like, are they saying government authorities got down and wrote this? I'm not sure what their point is, because that's not the case.
Who was the originals? Like, were they Jesus' friends?
So it depends on the book you're talking about. You can Michael's read through the scriptures. Cracking up right now. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and
you know Matthew, Jesus' friend. Yeah. Oh yeah, he's great. Yeah.
But were they like after him? Were they after Jesus?
You know, Paul. Don't you mean I knew him as when he was Saul?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they wrote about the stories about Jesus. They weren't like his all his compatriots got slaughtered, right?
No, they wrote like a lot of them. The New Testament. Apostles. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm such a noob.
Yeah, a lot of his friends. I was going to say I found a verse in Hebrews 8:4-5. It says, for if he were on earth, he would not be a priest at all, seeing there are priests who offer the gifts according to the Torah, who serve a copy and a shadow of the heavenly things, even as Moses was warned by God when he was about to make the tabernacle For he said, see, you shall make everything according to the pattern that was shown you on the mountain. So I don't see that as being
a direct
one-to-one
correlation. That's saying more that they're doing a pale reflection of reality,
right.
Which is still real. Like
right.
they're being phonies.
Still real. Right. Yeah. So it's not a fool. It's not exactly what they're saying. So
all right. David Robinson says machine elves are beings taking DMT and telling their friends about the flesh dwarves they talk about.
Oh, that makes sense. I like that.
And they says, please have Justin Amash on. We haven't, but perhaps we will. I was very critical of him in the past because he came out hard against Trump at a time when I felt that Trump was being unfairly maligned in the press.
They keep asking about it. He has a very good argument for it. So I like him. He's grown on me a lot.
Considering he's done made some good votes, I was you know, like, oh, all right, interesting, you know. But I remember, like, his first thing was just being like, the Republicans are bad and, you know, coming out and – and it's like, well, he's not wrong.
No, his point when I was just on his podcast, he goes, more presidents should be impeached. Hmm. He's like, we let them get away with too much. And that was actually a good argument.
It is. And the Republicans are trash. It's just there are some good people who run as Republicans.
Right.
Democrats are trash as well. There's substantially less good people who run as Democrats. But I don't know. Tulsi did for whatever reason, although they call her right wing.
So. Where's she going to run? In Hawaii, you have to run as a Democrat.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And she's a lefty. I mean, she's for hardcore welfare state, socialized, you know.
But she believes in the truth, that means she's right wing. And she doesn't like war. G says, Ezekiel 1:1-8, could this be Ian's machine elves? Probably not, but it will blow Ian's mind.
1:1-8, Ezekiel 1:1-8.
1:1-8.
If Ian wants his mind blown, he needs to read the book of Enoch, which is apocryphal.
Yeah.
But that has all the stuff.
Is that where he goes to space?
No, that's where the Nephilim are, and it's like.
Oh,
the
Nephilim aren't in the Bible?
There's one verse of them only, it's not clear what they are. What's that?
They're not in the Bible.
Yeah. Aren't they like angel-human hybrids or something?
Well, that's the question.
There's a verse about the sons of God or something like that.
The giants were on the earth in those days and after.
It's not clear exactly what's being... Yeah,
they had hang gliders.
But there's one word, and so people that describe it, and it's mysterious, and so because it's mysterious, people have just extrapolated so many explanations for it over the years.
Why is the Book of Enoch apocryphal?
Because it's not... The Nicene Council said this isn't Bible.
So it is Bible, but they just said no.
But that's not a Bible. The Bible is what has been officially validated as the books of the Bible.
Right.
So it's all very authoritarian.
There's also the youthful gospel of Christ, or forget something it's called.
And Thomas and stuff. Yeah.
So you're saying the book of Enoch was like fan fiction and they're like, get out of here. That's not canon.
Kinda. I wouldn't say fan fiction.
There were different accounts that were determined to be unreliable for whatever reason or not holy scripture.
Or doesn't add up to the rest of the stuff. It's interesting is that I think there's verses in the Bible that refer to books that have been deemed apocryphal. So that was kind of an issue for them.
Thank you. Yes. Enoch was Noah's grandfather.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Polaris 589 says, get Michael Malice and John Mattingly on at the same time.
Oh, no, I don't want World War III.
It wouldn't that be World be War III. It would be slaughtering a pig.
Okay.
Ooh. Choice words.
Oink, oink.
Daniel Thompson says, John Mattingly, for those don't know, he's the cop we had on. He was in the Breonna Taylor incident.
Oh, you got it. You had him on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the other day.
Oh, my God. Your numbers must have been zero.
Oh, it was the biggest show we've ever had.
Yeah. We
everybody was like,
this
guy's so much better than Michael.
Yeah, that's true.
That's about right. Sweet.
Daniel Thompson says, first time super chatter. You should have Jennifer Ruth Green on your show. She is a conservative running in the 1st District in Indiana. She's a 20-year-old Air Force veteran that has a good chance of flipping the district. Interesting. Hmm. Yeah, well, you want to write down Jennifer Ruth Green?
Writing this down now.
That's fun. I'd love to get some, you know, like, sane, honest Democrats.
I guess. I think they're all Republicans now.
I know, for real.
Or at least
Tulsi.
Not Democrats anymore.
But they'd have a huge cost coming on here.
I know, they won't do it. Look, Tulsi Gabbard wants gun control, and she opposes nuclear energy. There's a bunch of things that are just very much in line with the left. But then she's like, oh, that stuff they report in the news about Hunter Biden is true. And they're like, she's conservative.
No, she's a Russian asset.
Right, she's a Russian agent.
And she's pro-Putin. Only someone who's pro-Putin would say that these aren't Photoshop photos of him with a ruler next to his generals.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Exactly.
Lumberjack says, I can totally relate to Mr. Malice. Nerds, nerds, nerds.
Thank you, Lumberjack. I'm also Lumberjack, and I'm okay.
That's not an insult. That's just a fact of life. I agree with that. So say the lobster Lumberjack. This is the way.
Star Trek or Star Wars?
Star Wars. You don't get me started. Are you kidding? If you look at the this is like the fourth time I have to give this speech. If you look at the biodiversity just on Earth's deep sea, right? And then you look at Star Trek where they go to other planets and it's a guy who's got blue skin.
Oh,
are you kidding me?
Listen to this guy who doesn't know anything about Star Trek.
I don't need to know. That's all I had. I knew enough and I'm like, I'm out of here.
Bro,
where Star Wars, look at the Jabba's Palace, look at the Ifan Mon, Yak face.
Let me correct you, you incorrect man. The first
highly illogical.
The first mistake you're making is when people compare Star Trek to Star Wars is the first mistake. Star Wars.
They just asked me to compare them.
Yeah,
and right, this is the first mistake. Oops. Right, so this is not on you. Star Wars is a fantasy adventure. Star Trek is naval tradition and civil libertarianism explored through the lens of technological advancement and cultural development on other worlds. The reason why in Star Trek everybody's humanoid is it's we can't afford it. It was the 60s. And they just put people in costumes, and the budgets were so trash that sometimes the Star Trek crew would just go into like a white room, and it was like, oh, we're in a, because they didn't have the budget for it.
Do you know why you can't watch Star Trek in Florida?
You can't. What do you mean?
Because it's gay.
Oh, snap! That bill that they just did.
Have you watched Star Trek?
Yes, very little of it. I hate it.
You've not watched like the Next Generation with Picard?
No, that's the good one. That's the one I like.
This is the issue. You're so closed-minded, Michael.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
I'll tell you what the show's about.
Maybe I should take some DMT and watch Star Trek.
If you think you're going to watch Star Trek and get a Star Wars-like experience with people force-pushing and laser-sorting, you're wrong. What Star Trek is a captain and a commander with naval traditions saying, terrorists have engaged this planet, how do we deal with it? Data the android is like, I don't understand why you're so resistant to terrorism, why it's considered wrong when it's been so effective throughout history, such as in these particular moments. And they're like, how do we deal with this problem? Or there's one where
you're not selling it to me.
The state tries to seize the child, and Captain Picard says, forcing a man to give up his child to the state, not while I'm captain. And they're sitting down having a conversation about why it's wrong for the state to claim dominion over someone's children.
Okay.
It's not laser swords. It's literally a guy being like, free speech. There's so much good shit. You got me swearing now. You got, when the first chain of the link is forged, the first word censured, we are all irrevocably chained or whatever. It's a great quote. Then there's also the storyline where Picard is being tortured. And
I know how he felt.
And he's got there's four lights at the table.
I know there's three lights. Yeah, I get it.
There's four lights.
Okay.
And it's just like, you gotta watch it, man.
I think I'm the more of a Star Wars guy just because of the Force. I think it's real.
But Star Wars is like, I'm gonna defeat the evil Dooku, and Star Trek is like...
The first three after that,
bro,
I gave up.
Bro, in Deep Space Nine, there's like a war is breaking out. They're trying to convince another faction to join them, so they stage a false flag attack on a senator from Romulan Empire to trick them into joining the war on their side.
Okay.
It's just amazing. It's politics. If you like politics, you'd like it.
I don't know about that.
Oh, man. I don't know. I feel like you could take a lot of the sci-fi sci-fi backdrop out of it, and you're just watching the exploration of ideas around political concepts.
Then why they have a guy with a wrinkle on his head and call him an alien?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's just a mechanism for having these plots around philosophical concepts and ethics, morals, and technology. And to tell you the story, to spoil it for you, it's because the progenitors seeded their DNA throughout the galaxy.
Panspermia.
But you see, you get lost in the sci-fi instead of exploring the political
ideas. I'm very skeptical that a syndicated show is going to treat these issues in a way that I would find interesting.
When the Admiral tells Picard, you are jeopardizing your command and career because he's refusing to give someone's child to the state. And then he says, there comes a time when men of good conscience will defy orders given to hand over. Force a man to hand his child over to the state, not while I'm captain.
Okay.
It's amazing.
I agree with
you. I'm sitting there and I'm like, yes! I know, that's why you'd love it. Because so much of what you believe would be reflected and explored through, like, in certain situations where you'd be like, wow. You know, these ideas conflicting and how they clash and how you resolve them.
Okay, I'm going to have to, like, get people to, like, raise, like, a grand, and then I'll watch, the first six episodes?
The challenge is there's something called Riker's Beard. You ever hear of this concept?
Oh, God, no.
You know, jumping the
shark.
Don't
worry, we have time.
Yes, of course.
Riker's Beard is the opposite.
It's when things get good.
It's when things get good. So in the second season, it's when Jonathan Frakes grew a beard, and the show really started to kick off.
Yeah, the first season was really
awkward.
You're
not going to convince me that things get better when someone grows a beard. I assure you it gets much, much worse, I speak from experience.
Their acting was really rigid in the first season. Everyone was standing really still, didn't really know each other as people. Like, they were just working together as actors. You can tell they're getting to know each other.
The Ferengi. Seasons. You know what the Ferengi are?
Aren't they the me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Their motto is caveat emptor.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They didn't develop warp technology. So here's how it works. Civilizations will develop warp technology allowing faster than light travel. The Federation then greets them around this time, like, you're now entering the galactic community. We're going to talk to you. The Ferengi bought it. They figured out how to trade and manipulate their way into technology they're not culturally developed to, enough to understand. It's such brilliant writing across the board. There's some bad stuff. Voyager's kind of eh, but you know, man.
Is Voyager with the girl?
Voyager, yeah, it's the Janeway. First time they had a female captain, and the entire plot is they get lost and they have to make their way back home.
It's
That's
true.
The whole series.
It's true.
Yeah. The first episode, they get lost, and the whole series is they're trying to get back to
Be
Earth.
Fair, a powerful entity sucks them something like 70,000.
Was that an excuse? There's always an
wait,
excuse.
Was that powerful? Doctor. Entity, a clothing sale.
Yeah, maybe.
Shoe
store.
30% off.
Yeah,
it's a lot of gravity coming out of
it. We can't resist this. Yeah. Come on, gals, grab your purses.
I think you'd need to find someone to just be like, here, watch one episode, because you probably wouldn't like all of it.
Okay,
but there's like such good political moments in it.
I'll raise a grand and I'll watch three.
Perfect.
Okay.
If you recorded yourself watching them and commenting, I will
pay you $1,000. To do a live, to like to do a reaction as you watch three
selected
episodes.
I will watch them with an open mind.
Yes.
And we'll
I want to like it.
Yeah, Jordy
like,
LaForge.
If I like it, there's a lot of material for me to
consume.
It
doesn't really sound like you
want to
like it.
No, I want to like it. It just seems, everything I've seen makes me seem that old. Because I love looking for new shows to watch.
Yeah.
You can watch Legendary so many times.
So check it out. So in the original series, there's the bad guys, the Klingons. They're just like bad guys. In the Next Generation, all of a sudden, there's like a Klingon on the Federation ship. They're good guys now. What they wrote was, the Klingons are an honor culture. They're very much, you have to have honor and be a warrior. So there's another race called the Romulans. Yep. It's based on like Roman style, and they're passion driven. So one day, or star date or whatever, the Romulans are attacking a Klingon civilian colonial outpost, and they send off a distress signal. The earlier version of the Enterprise responds to their enemy, the Klingons' distress signal, to try and save the women and the children, and end up dying in an effort to save people from this Romulan attack. And the Klingons see that as an honorful, you know, as honor, and they see the Romulans as a dishonorable, and that creates the alliance between the Klingon Empire.
Very noble of you to refer as Klingons as people.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Anyway, thanks for hanging out, everybody. Make sure you smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. Go to TimCast.com, become a member. You can follow us at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. Michael, you want to shout anything out?
Michael Malice on Twitter, Michael Malice Official on YouTube. And I'm really glad to have done this. I'll see you guys soon.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this was a great time. I want to mention and shout out 1776 Flag Company, who made this as a gift for TimCast, the place behind me. Thank you very much. And I want to shout out my cartoon, Freedom Tunes. Please go check it out. I think you guys will enjoy it.
Also, I want to circle back to your show, You're Welcome, which always never disappoints.
Oh,
always
thank
is
you.
Awesome. Very intelligently done. And that's on YouTube. Is that just search for You're Welcome? It's
absolutely.
Without the apostrophe.
Yes.
I like that.
It's possessive, yeah.
I'm Ian Crossland. Catch you later.
Thank you guys very much for tuning in for our 500th episode with Michael Malice. I am loving the new look. I think that you should make this permanent. Gonna go with it. It's gonna be great. Stick with it, Michael. You guys may follow me on Twitter and minds.com at Sarah Patchlitz.
Thanks for hanging out, everybody. We will see you all over at Chicken City. Go to youtube.com/Chicken City right now to watch our chickens and subscribe. And you can also check out the Cast Castle because we have daily vlogs. Other than that, we'll be back with the show on Monday. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.